Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2.
Yarr!
Today's October 12th, 2025, and this is GameBuoy Podcast, episode 184, Grand Theft Autumn. Where is your buoy? Taking a look at some of our favorite games for autumnal kickback vibes. With all that having been said, welcome once again each and every one of our lovely and beautiful listener to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Today we're going to be talking about some of our favorite games to revisit and themes to check out as the seasons change into the fall. We've sort of discussed here on the show over the years, but for example, I typically revisit games from the Zelda series over the annual American Thanksgiving break time. And I do, in fact, highly recommend it for, well, reasons we'll get into when we get to it. So that's what we have here on deck today. But before we get started, let's relax and talk about some games news. Slaggy, what is the way that we rhyme?
Yeah, so we are going to start off today with that very late in the episode last time. In fact, so late in the episode when it officially happened that we had to do a post-recording during the edit edition. And of course, I'm talking about the major purchase of EA by an investment firm and the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, I believe it's called. So we've got a couple of stories here to cover that. The first one is over on GameBuoy.org. Well, that's where we're going to link it.
GameBuoy.org.
Because you can find all our links there. So it's just a helpful kind of way to get perspective, because it's basically just a list of all the studios and properties that are part of the EA sale. This is over on GameStop that we're linking to. And so it's not really news in that way, but it did kind of give me pause to reflect on the scope of kind of how big that EA conglomerate had gotten over the years with all of the studios they own, all of the franchises that they own. Now, what I noticed on GameSpot, because some of these news sites kind of have like infinite scrolling with related stories or whatever. I don't really know how it works, but this originally wasn't on our show roll, but I saw the next story under it was talking about that some analysts are predicting that they may be selling some studios, specifically BioWare, who we have noted many times in our recent episodes, have kind of had a rough go of it, that they're is nothing specifically announced right now. So this is kind of more like rumor has it, but I just felt that was worth noticed. I felt that was worth noting because on a related note, at this time, EA is not planning to make any immediate changes to jobs. So GamesRadar was citing Stephen Totilo from Gamefile, formerly of Kotaku and other places, that EA put out an FAQ that they sent to employees. And one of the things on there was, will the private ownership lead to layoffs? And the response basically says there will be no immediate changes to your job. However, as the article on GamesRadar points out, immediate is kind of the key word here. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And my thoughts are that, the article says that this deal is expected to close in about 6 to 9 months. So I would say keep an eye out next spring. I unfortunately would not be surprised if we are going to be sharing some doom and gloom of some studio closures under EA, which is always just terrible. And Captain Spike literally just put on my radar right now that PC Gamer had an article about that anonymous staff at BioWare basically are waiting for the axe to fall, and that, people in BioWare are basically getting their resumes ready, portfolios, what have you, because it just doesn't look good. You know, they've had a rough go of it as it was. But now, with new ownership.
Particularly with the new ownership, I've seen some concern. You know, the specific ownership coming in is probably not an ownership that is super agreeable to the type of content that BioWare is traditionally known for making.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why I think I've, you know, have heard you say that a sale is, you know, potentially in discussion. And I think that would be for the best for BioWare would be to end up either self-possessed somehow, which, you know, that would be great, or more likely end up hopefully under the stewardship of someone who would effectively nurse them back to health.
Exactly. Honestly, I hope that that happens for them so that they can get a good home and that nobody has to lose their jobs. But, you know, we will stay tuned. The last piece that we wanted to link to you was a Eurogamer article. They spoke to a member of the Human Rights Watch organization. We highly recommend you check out this article if you'd like a little more geopolitical context about the EA buyout and kind of the thoughts behind that. So I definitely recommend if you want to check that out, you can go find it linked over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. And in fact, you can do it.
I was just going to say, where you can find all the links to any articles that we are discussing on this show and every show.
Indeed.
All 184 plus of them, because you got to include the micros.
Got to include the micros.
All right. Well, that was a lot of EA news. Did you have any other thoughts about them before we move on?
I think it's really sad that we can't talk about some of the larger geopolitical concerns we have about this. But I also think it is safer for us as content creators, to the degree that we are, to encourage people to read that last article in particular on their own about some of the concerns that people have with the specific controlling interests likely to come into play with this buyout. I think we have concerns. I think we've noted them in previous days when we were maybe a little less concerned about our speech coming under fire. But as things stand right now, I just would encourage people to do the reading, because, you know, just be aware of what's going on out there.
Yeah, keep gaming, keep reading, and keep thinking. But this isn't the end of the episode, sorry. Can you imagine that would be like literally our shortest episode? All right. That does it.
That might be our new record holder. GameBuoy Micro Mini. All right. This next one is actually kind of a big deal, but basically Unity disclosed this. This was about a week and a half ago, a years-old security exploit, and was urgently suggesting developers update their games to address it. This was a big surprise to a lot of folks. Some of the games that got hit by it, and I'm going to fold our next news story into it and just mention it here among them. We even saw games like Pillars of Eternity 2 getting straight up pulled from stores due to this exploit. Basically, Obsidian removed all of its games, as I understand it. Grounded, Avowed, both of the Pillars of Eternity games, Pentiment. Other games like Marvel Snap, No Rest for the Wicked, Fate Grand Order, Persona 5 Phantom Cross, Ingress have all been impacted to varying degrees by this. It's just kind of a real mess. And it reminds us we should be very mindful about what programs we're running and where they come from. We obviously shouldn't have to be worried about Unity games that we've purchased legitimately from Steam. But as we noted last week, unfortunately, we do still have to be aware, even when we are getting these softwares from reputable sources sometimes.
Scary.
Indeed. In less scary news, however, we have word that Nintendo has established a new arm in the region of Singapore.
Oh, wow.
Specifically, yeah, in the Republic of Singapore. This is Nintendo Singapore, and it is broadly understood that they are also considering, dependent on how things go, in also working on making progress toward a Nintendo Thailand. So fingers crossed that things continue to go well for Nintendo. I've been pretty clear that while I do have concerns with them as a business entity. I also think that they are consistently moving the game's space ahead, and I do think that counts for something.
Indeed. And speaking of moving, things are moving along with Sega and the International Olympic Committee. That was not a great transition, but this is kind of a fun little tidbit. They have made a multi-year licensing deal for Sonic and Olympic Reigns co-branded merchandising. So kind of a little bit of a fluff piece of news.
Dude, no, this is so exciting to me. I'm a big fan of
you are a big fan of the Olympics. Sorry, well, I have to cut you off there.
Well, so I like the Olympics generally, but I also specifically really like the Mario and Sonic at the Olympics Games series. I've talked about this before, and years back when we used to regularly go to round one, I would even play the arcade versions of these games.
That's right.
So for me, these games stopped back in 2020, and I've actually been bummed about it because I enjoy these games so much. So for me, this was major news. I'm really, really excited about this.
Yeah, right now it sounds like it's mostly for merchandising. We don't have any indication yet that this is in the game space. At the time, as you mentioned, that partnership with the International Olympic Committee ended in 2020. The IOC said they were going to explore other partnerships such as NFTs, and esports. But, we can only hope, because that was definitely the first thing I thought of, even if it's not Mario and Sonic. Sonic needs to go back to the Olympics.
Yeah, having Sonic and the Olympics connected again is the first step toward getting a new game made. Mark my words, when we get toward the next Olympics hype cycle, we're going to start hearing about game stuff. I would put money on it.
That's true. I mean, it's good to know that Sega and the Olympics are in good standing with each other.
Indeed. I have a news story here. It has a advisory warning on it. I think this is super sad. I need a watch my language advisory on this. But I guess that's the reality of 2025. Basically, Fortnite had added a emote for the current season opening dance of Peacemaker, Peaceful Hips. This was set to the opening song. The thing is, season two of Peacemaker, without spoiling too much, dips into fascist imagery and specifically German National Socialist imagery. And so there was some concern that the dance, because it had some similarities to some of the iconography of the era, including dances done of the era per some social media posts, Epic actually immediately disabled the dance, and it actually put out a pretty dire warning that they were basically going to inquire into the partner's creative intentions with the emote, basically implying that if it was actually meant to evoke that imagery, they were going to remove it from the game. We're happy to note that ultimately it was found that this was not meant to evoke this particular reference in this context. They have changed the emote to no longer reference that imagery, and I think that's for the best for everyone. I think this is a pretty happy end result, even if it was a somewhat harrowing process to get there.
Yeah, yeah. I am not familiar with the Peacemaker series beyond the folks involved in it, but the folks involved in it don't seem like the type who would be doing that sort of thing for a trollololol. So I'm glad to hear that that was not the case.
Absolutely. And it's also, it's a lot of fun. It's also my understanding that this season two is going to be super relevant in the upcoming Superman sequel movie. And I really enjoyed that first Superman movie. So I've just been waiting for Peacemaker season two to wrap, and then I'll watch it. I like the first one a fair bit after enjoying the character in The Suicide Squad. And it's weird, these movies. Anyway, we also got word here that Tokyo Game Show 2025, which ran from September 25th to 28th, concluded with a total of 263,101 visitors. That is a successful show by all accounts. Next year's Tokyo Game Show is going to be the first 5-day event in show history, going from September 17th to 21st, 2026. Please look forward to it. I know we will be here on the show.
Indeed, and I am glad we can enjoy it from sites like Gematsu, because that's too many people. That's like 263,000 people in a large city, or, you know, not a large city, like a moderate-sized suburb, and 101 Dalmatians.
Ah!
And you had to go through all the levels to find them, like, never again, honestly.
We also got here the surprise early announcement. You know, we had been speculating in previous weeks, because Dragon Ball FighterZ had been referenced as a part of the announcement slate for the upcoming Dragon Ball Power Hour that will be happening next April. We had all sort of had our eyes open for potential Dragon Ball FighterZ announcements, but obviously presuming they would be coming next year, maybe Q1 or something. But no, here out of the blue, relatively, we've gotten the announcement from Bandai Namco that Dragon Ball FighterZ will be getting new downloadable content in spring of 2026. The first new fighter that the game has gotten in 4 years. This is Goku Super Saiyan 4 version, Dragon Ball Daima version. Obviously, the last thing FighterZ needed necessarily was another Goku, and yet I remain really excited about this. They also announced that there was going to be a new balance update launching this week. I haven't had the opportunity to check that out yet, as it was scheduled to go live today. And while we're at it, I saw a lot of concern among the Dragon Ball Sparking Zero fandom that basically, while all of the Sparking Zero fans are somewhat disappointed in the recent DLC releases that have occurred for that game, I think I mentioned that last episode, seeing the FighterZ fandom all excited inspired a great deal of envy and jealousy, it seems. It's worth noting, however, that just about a week prior to that announcement, that Bandai Namco had also announced Dragon Ball Sparking Zero is getting a new round of DLC characters. These characters are going to start being announced in January of 2026. And we're already, for Sparking Zero, at over 200 characters, and they're just going to keep climbing.
Wow.
Yeah, it's honestly a pretty exciting time to be a Dragon Ball games fan. I like these fighting games a lot. FighterZ in particular, I think, is really great. Sparking Zero, I think, is kind of a fun time, but the stuff that I'm into fighting games for isn't really present here, unfortunately. Really, really beautiful way to experience the sagas of the show, though. Oh, this was a really cute news story. Yeah. Slaggy, did you happen to see on Tuesday, Nintendo began streaming an animated short called Close to You?
It was super cute.
Yeah, right? It was just this little video, almost kind of like Pixar styled, about...
It was super Pixar styled, yeah.
Yeah, right? A baby, his magical seeming pacifier, dancing around the room, doing music, while his mother had been, you know, leaving him alone or whatever. And then, interestingly, like day later, Nintendo uploaded a new version of the short where, rather than the pacifier dancing around on its own, it was actually being carried around by Pikmin. And it became clear that actually this was, in some form, some kind of cute new Pikmin animated short. Then a couple days later, so now bringing us to the end of the week and a little closer to now, we got the confirmation out of Nintendo that this is the first official work coming out of Nintendo Pictures, whom was normally acquired. Doesn't necessarily suggest anything while also being super exciting. What were your thoughts on this?
I think that it was cute. I don't see it replacing their partnership with, like, Illumination or anything, or Universal, but I think it's cute. It'll be interesting to see what else comes from this.
I would love to see them really start getting into doing anime collaborations again. I say collaborations, but obviously I mean producing it themselves. I would love to see, like, a long form Fire Emblem TV series. I say long form, I mean 13 or 26 episodes would be fine, but, like, I don't know, I think there are so many Nintendo IP that are really screaming for a modern animated adaptation, and Nintendo running a modern animated studio, I think, can only lead to positive outcomes, because they have such a wealth of IP to develop new narratives for that they can then reflect back in the games. And that's, you know, a common concern about Nintendo games is their narratives. If they could work in concert with, you know, people who know how to make narratives, it, I think can only lead to more positive outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, back when Nintendo Pictures was Dynamo Pictures, you know, they worked on Kingsglaive, the Final Fantasy 15 movie. And
Justice,
you know,
for Kingsglaive. I actually like it.
Absolutely.
Love Nyx.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, they've got some great talent there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then we also have word here. Coming out of Dynasty Warriors series producer Tomohiko Sho, that basically there is some interest behind the scenes in remaking additional Dynasty Warriors titles beyond Dynasty Warriors 3 Complete Edition Remastered. But at this time, whether those additional remasters get developed or not will depend on the success of the Dynasty Warriors 3 remaster. So if you are interested in these series and you'd like to see more remasters, this is a time to let your dollars do the talking.
Sounds like it.
And last but not least, before we get to our release updates, we have a release update. This is the unfortunate word coming out of Yacht Club Games that Mina the Hollower is not going to make its previously announced October 31st Halloween date.
Oh no.
They have noted quite emphatically that this isn't a major delay. They just don't want to release a new date until they have the game to the various platform holders and certified. I think that sucks. I think this means it's more likely we will get a shadow drop on a random Thursday or possibly alongside the Game Awards type event or something. But from the sound of it, it's still going to be a 2025 release. So it's hard for me to be too mad about it. Still really excited for this game. And I do still believe in the general idea that I would rather a game be delayed than released hella broken and make a horrible first impression.
Yeah, we would not want this to be the game that causes Yacht Club Games to go under.
Yeah, holy cannoli. And then with that having been said, it is, of course, time for our release updates. A lot of these are games we have previously discussed, or in this particular week's iteration, are titles you may already own digitally. but all the same, let's go through these. We have Majo Gami. This is the new 2D action game coming out of Intic Creates that's going to be seeing an October 30th release for PC. We have Romance of the Three Kingdoms 8 remake. The Destiny and Strategy expansion pack is going to be releasing on January 29th, 2026, and that's going to be a worldwide release. We have the Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VIII remastered twin pack, as well as Final Fantasy IX single game physical editions for Switch. These are previously released in Japanese and other Asian regions on physical. These are getting a North American release in December, coming up on December 9th. Likewise, for the PlayStation 5, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Intergrade, and Rebirth are getting a physical edition twin pack release. Tamirana, The Lucky Princess and the Tragic Knights, will be launching in the West on January 13th, 2026. Power Wash Simulator 2 will be launching October 23rd. We are soon to be getting a new update for Vampire Survivors. This is going to be adding some of the previously, I think, console-exclusive online co-op features into a more general setting, which is a strong positive for the broad audience of the game. We also have word that starting tomorrow, so today when you when you're listening to this most likely, or possibly previously, Let It Die Inferno will be releasing a limited time demo for PC. We also have word that the new Boku no Hero Academia game is going to be releasing. This is All's Justice, coming out on February 6th, 2026. And last but certainly not least, the new 2D adaptation of Terminator, this is Terminator 2D No Fate, has been delayed to November 26th. All of this having been done, all of this having been said, I would like to go to the club. Culture club.
Well, the club is a bit of a bummer, and also the rumor mill today. We kind of got some other segments rolled into other segments today. That's because this first article technically is a rumor, but it's pretty credible. It's from Gamefile, which of course is the new home for Stephen Totilo. He has sources that Ubisoft.
Technically, it's Ubi, but I do find that a lot of Americans say Ubi.
Ubisoft.
Including us until fairly recently.
Right. I feel like I like have to question myself. I'm like, it's Ubisoft, right? Now that I say it right. So Ubisoft reportedly canceled a Assassin's Creed game that was early in development. This was going to be set during the Reconstruction era of the United States history, which is post-Civil War. So far, the only Civil War we've had so far. It was going to feature as its main character a black man who formerly was enslaved by the South and would be confronting the emergence of the Ku Klux Klan. According to these sources, the management in Paris stopped it for two reasons. One was the online backlash with the reveal of Yasuke, the historically inspired black samurai from Assassin's Creed Shadows, and that the political climate in the United States was becoming increasingly tense. And a pull quote from the Gamefile article is, "Too political in a country too unstable to make it short," one source familiar with the game had said. That, yeah.
I mean, that sums it up, right?
What I have to say, though, is that's a shame. It's been a while since I've played an Assassin's Creed. I've really been kind of itching to play one lately for a surprisingly unrelated reason, but something that will come up today in my What's Up. And, you know, I enjoyed those original Assassin's Creeds quite a bit. So that alone is like a bummer when there's not another Assassin's Creed. I generally think these games are pretty rad. But also specifically, I think this would have been a really interesting era to explore. I really enjoyed Assassin's Creed 3 Liberation, which was during the Revolutionary War. Also featured a really cool main character as the assassin.
Yeah, I really appreciated the person of color in that role in particular. I thought that Liberation was a real high point for the series. I've played nearly every game in this series, I'm realizing while you're talking here.
Yeah, I haven't really played any since that kind of Assassin's Creed 3 era. I think I played a little bit of Black Flag, maybe, but then that was just a really busy time for me. But yeah, Aveline, that was her name. She was really cool. So
yeah, I'm realizing I haven't done some of the spin-offs, but otherwise, yeah, I think I've played every mainline game in the series.
Yeah, I've got to catch up on them, but I guess I can't catch up on whatever this would have been. Yeah. You know, who knows?
I'm bummed. I'm really bummed about this because, likewise, between the content from Assassin's Creed 3 that rubs up on American stuff and the stuff that you were referring to in Liberation, I feel like the mental version of a Reconstruction era game that I'm imagining would be really freaking cool. Like, it seems like a really cool setting to do an Assassin's Creed particular revenge story, which they typically are, you know. That's just
right.
That's the series, you know.
Yeah, it's just,
I think
this,
that,
you
the
know,
setting
very,
would be really good. Yeah. It would be really potent. I think it would carry a whole story and a whole setting really well. And yet, all the same, sort of similar to how I was concerned about using my speech during one of our previous stories in this episode, it sounds like they just aren't entirely comfortable with developing the game at the modern moment, and I can't really say I blame them.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's kind of telling because when Assassin's Creed 3 Liberation came out, it dealt with not all of the same issues, but, you know, there were some similar issues because that was, you know, that part of history, despite what some people might believe to be the history of this country. I'm just saying. So, you know, because that was happening, that game came out during a different time in our current history, you know, that did not seem to ruffle feathers back then, but I could see where you know.
I mean, it definitely did with regard to, like, the Glommer Gloop contingent of folks. I actually do recall seeing a lot of negativity about Liberation back in the day, and I actually remember being really bummed about it.
Oh, well, that kind of explains how we got here.
Yeah, unfortunately, the trash has been in the room with us for a while. And, you know, I will also note, if you're a listener to this and back in the day you had a problem with Liberation, but maybe that doesn't track to your modern values, I want to note I'm not talking about you anymore, because that's not your modern values. But also, if you held that value at the time, you might find that going back and revisiting Liberation, it's actually a pretty cool game. I think to a certain degree, that's all I want to say about that, because we do unfortunately risk touching some potentially toxic material that I would prefer not to get in trouble for.
Indeed, especially with how our history is taught. That's a whole other can of worms. So let's talk about some movies that are not yet in the can, but will be. That's what they call it when a movie is, like, wrapped in.
It's in the can when it's ready to play.
Yeah.
And so we have word here that a Minecraft movie sequel has been greenlit and is presently targeted for July 23rd, 2027. That sounds like so far away, but it's honestly only less than 2 years. So, oh boy. And likewise, this weekend is New York Comic Con, and so we got the announcement of a new Advance video game sequel to a different video game movie. This is Mortal Kombat, but not Mortal Kombat 2. We're actually going to also be getting Mortal Kombat 3. Apparently, Warner Brothers are so happy with the soon-to-release, but still recently delayed Mortal Kombat 2 movie that they have already greenlit a third movie to rush into production. I say rush. I mean to hurry it into production. We do not have any indication yet that the production process is breaking down. Actually, quite the opposite. It sounds like they're finally making good Mortal Kombat movies. I thought that first one that had released, I kind of have the sense of it releasing during COVID, but it's been a while. I liked it. I've been looking forward to the second one, and now I'm looking forward to the third one.
Excellent.
We also had this really interesting story, and you had put this one on my radar. This was a statement from Toby Fox saying basically that the quote-unquote smart way to make games was via asset reuse, right? He was describing the way that he is doing Deltarune and making so much bespoke content as quote-unquote stupid. The interesting pull quote out of this one was, "The method I have chosen is not very efficient for development," which is pretty funny. This kind of goes back to the ongoing debate we've had in games since the old sprite-based games. And it's funny, we were just talking about Mortal Kombat, although the movie. I remember the fast turnaround times of the Mortal Kombat arcade games and their sprite and other asset reuse being one of the commonly cited reasons why they end up releasing those first three arcade games over the span of just like 3.5 years. Just really, we're hammering them out. I think there's always been historically from the consumer almost expectation of, if I'm buying this game, it should have all new assets. But from the developer's perspective, and again, I brought up Mortal Kombat, but you could just as easily look at Mega Man or Castlevania. I think developers have sort of always recognized that you can go a little further if you make these assets work universally for multiple projects. And so I just think it's really interesting to hear this being cited by probably one of the most major players in the indie space today.
Absolutely.
Because you had linked me to this, did you have anything you'd like to add to that?
No, I just think Toby Fox is a weird and cool dude.
Fantastic.
And apparently was at dinner with, like, Sakurai-san, Kamiya-san, Kodaka-san, and a bunch of other, like, amazing developers. So, like, he's very well respected. So, you know, I know he thinks that he is just a silly developer, but he's, you know, very celebrated, especially in Japan.
Yeah. Let's see. We also have some cool news here. This is word that Silent Hill F is getting a spin-off novel or novel adaptation. This is going to be published by Kadokawa. It's going to be releasing on October 30th, 2025, so just at the end of this month, in time for Halloween. It will be written by Shiro Kuroi, which that's cute. That's, isn't that person's pen name just a White Black?
Yes.
But the interesting thing about Shiro Kuroi is that apparently this person is known for his original works that are of a Lovecraftian nature, shall we say it. So right now it's unknown how true the novelization will be to the game's original ending, if it's going to follow one of them or what it's going to do. But I think a lot of people, because so many folks have enjoyed Silent Hill F recently, and I imagine it might be something we will potentially talk about in a few weeks. But I don't know. I think the vibes are vibing this spooky season, and I think folks are excited for more Silent Hill content.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people enjoy Silent Hill F.
Indeed. This was another news story that you had put on my radar, but basically the headline, which I think communicates the biggest part of this story, teen who threatened to kill devs at Fortnite studio pleads guilty. And this was basically the fairly sad story of a just 19-year-old kid who basically acknowledged that he did send threatening messages to Epic Games. Obviously, it's not okay or cool that this happened. It really sucks that this kid is going through this. I think it's good that he is obviously acknowledging the reality of the choices that he made, but holy cannoli, what a sad story.
Yeah, please don't use your words that way, people.
Yeah, for real. I mean,
that's just kind of putting it out into the universe. I do not think that our lovely, beautiful listener would use that type of rhetoric to communicate with people.
No, fortunately, I'm inclined to agree.
This one is back to a little bit of fun news after that very serious headline. So this is that we've had the revelation that the author Roman Kitayama, who has written novels, manga scripts, and game pitches, is actually secretly been the former president of Nipponichi Software, Sohei Nikawa-san. He revealed that he is behind the persona of Roman Kitayama, and that under his persona of Kitayama will be the writer and producer of his new upcoming game, Etrange Overlord. I think I'm saying that right. Described as a Sushi Lane musical action adventure, which is coming out on March 26th of next year. And he also noted that he will continue to announce projects as himself and as Roman Kitayama on their own separate accounts, which is very funny to me. I'm getting very Nils Schulberg energy. If you know, you know.
I had to Google it, and then I was like, oh my god, I forgot about that.
Right? Like, I don't usually refer to people writing music under pseudonyms, but if this is what you came for, then I guess enjoy, LOL.
Yeah, I forgot that happened once in the life of a showgirl.
Right?
Let's see, keeping Mortal Kombat on our tongues, this was major news among certain circles in the gaming space. Basically, Dan Forden, whom most people know as Toasty Dan, who has been an iconic part of the Mortal Kombat series since Mortal Kombat 2 in 1993, although he's actually been working there behind the scenes for practically as long, has announced he is leaving NetherRealm Studios. This news was shared last week, that last Wednesday, I guess, was his last day at NetherRealm. This is obviously a little bit of a bummer since he's so iconic that his literal face is in many of these games popping up in the corner and has become an like iconic longstanding gaming meme since before we even had the words to put that into, you know, to phrase that, right? A meme before a meme, I'm saying. So just end of an era, wild stuff. He is obviously a sound editor and audio director, has been there for 36 years, just wild stuff. Saiki, what do you think?
I think that's a great tenure for him. I hope that whatever he is doing next, that he is happy and toasty.
And you are, I have to ask, you're familiar in Mortal Kombat 2 with Toasty Dan, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Very good. And so for those of you at home who might not be, basically, every time you uppercut someone in Mortal Kombat 2, and I'm not going to have the rate with which it occurs correct. I don't recall if it was a random chance or if it was like a once every, 52 times type setup. But basically, every time you would uppercut someone in Mortal Kombat 2, you would occasionally have a little head that would pop up in the corner of your screen of Dan Forden's face, and it would just play this really high-pitched audio clip going, "Toasty!" And it became iconic. It was a meme before we had words for memes, right? Like, so this being obviously him leaving, and it's also worth noting that Toasty Dan specifically was tied to one of the secret characters in Mortal Kombat 2, his appearance and making him come up on a specific stage during a specific stage element could summon a hidden character. So he became a huge part of fighting game lore, Toasty Dan.
Maybe he'll show up in the Mortal Kombat movie.
I wouldn't be shocked. I hope he does. Anyway, we're going a little far afield. Let's bring this train back on track. We have a news story here. This is being published via GamesRadar.com. The headline here is, Nintendo has not had any contact with the Japanese government about generative AI. The Switchmaker shoots down rumors, but insists it'll keep fighting infringement of our intellectual property. Basically, there was a major trending news story last week that had suggested that Nintendo was actively lobbying the Japanese government against generative AI. Unfortunately, those rumors did not turn out to be true. Nintendo issued a clarifying statement, which is, what we're referring to here. But, it is a good thing that they have noted that they are going to work to fight the infringement of their property. AI is being used increasingly in the games space, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later. I think we have a news story about it. But particularly, some companies are really not being respected in the same ways as other companies in terms of protecting their intellectual property, which is, in fact, I think something else that we have another story about later on in this episode.
Yeah.
So hearing that Nintendo isn't generally lobbying against generative AI isn't actually a huge surprise. I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't using AI in very certain, hopefully very limited applications. But hearing them say specifically that they are going to continue working to fight to keep, their intellectual property out of this shit and to prevent their stuff from being infringed upon is to me an encouraging sign, because as we see, for example, Pikachu videos popping up coming out of Sora 2 AI video modeling.
Mm-hmm.
I hope Nintendo takes legal action, frankly. I find this implementation of AI to be a monstrosity, to be something of a blight. And if it takes getting the corporate overlords fighting, then I'll take it if it solves the issue, even if it isn't a little bit of a sad state of our present affairs.
Absolutely.
We also have word here. This is via gamesindustry.biz.
Gamesindustry.biz.
I knew you were going to do it. I paused for you and you delivered. That GLAAD is going to be launching a new program to mentor early career LGBTQ+ developers. The actual quote that Games Industry ran was, "Authentic representation in media can create positive cultural change for LGBTQ people." I have to note, I actually really agree with that pull quote. It's basically the reason why we do this show. we've been pretty clear. We've been pretty clear about that, right? That just being seen, talking honestly about our issues and concerns has traditionally been the way that differences and gaps are bridged. So I'm really excited to see this. I think that this is the kind of thing we really need more of in modern workplaces and spaces. I have very little negative to say about this one. You go, GLAAD. Good for you.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad to hear this. Get it? And I feel like we were kind of touching on this in our Game Boy Remake episode about LGBTQIA+ representation in gaming, about how it's really important for queer folks to be making games so that queer representation can be authentic.
Absolutely. We also got, and it's a little weird, it feels, to be talking about this one, but Koei Tecmo announced on Friday during a Ninja Gaiden 4 stream that the collaboration game they are doing with Platinum Games, Ninja Gaiden 4, will be getting its first DLC episode in 2026. The DLC will be included as part of the Deluxe Edition and Deluxe Upgrades as well. This is obviously really interesting to me in the sense that I love Platinum Games and I'm a big fan of the Ninja Gaiden series traditionally. I do definitely hope and plan to play this at some point. But again, while I do feel comfortable talking about Microsoft projects on air again because of the progress that they have made in how they conduct themselves geopolitically, I'm still not comfortable enough with them to resub Game Pass, for example, nor to buy Ninja Gaiden 4 necessarily. But it is, I guess, something I'm considering to a certain degree, an outright purchase of the game now, which I would not have been considering before we had gotten word of the adjustments Microsoft has made, because they are involved as a publishing partner. But it's not a Microsoft Game Studios game in as far as like being developed by them, and I don't want Koei Tecmo and Platinum to suffer for Microsoft's geopolitical choices.
Absolutely. This one's very quick. The news is that Skate 4 has reached over 15 million players. That's it. That's the news. GamesIndustry.biz does a segment called News in Brief, where they basically just link to a social media post or press release that kind of is the news. I could probably learn a thing or two from them.
I don't have any colloquy to say about that, but sometimes, yeah, the news is the news.
Yeah, I personally have not checked out Skate 4. I've heard a little bit of lukewarm reception, generally speaking, but, you know, people have feelings, so
yeah,
they're entitled to them.
I downloaded Skate 4 now. I haven't played it yet. I have spent, and I'll talk about this a little later, but I've spent much of my week that I haven't been actively playing games setting up a PC, so I just am kind of behind on some of the early access type and demos that I had been hoping to play this week. That having been said, I've heard a lot of people, yeah, kind of lukewarm to mixed. I think the way I heard it described on Era was something like, not the skate game we wanted, but the skate game we needed, which is always typically an indication that like, okay, so it's going to advance the formula, but it's not going to make everybody happy while it does it.
Yeah.
Let's see. We also had what was potentially big news here. There's going to be a new minor update to Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I say minor update because that's how it was described by Ben Starr, but frankly, the fact that they're getting the original voice cast to come back to record new audio should tell us it's not going to be that minor. Obviously, I think this is really exciting, but it's another one where the news is kind of the news.
Excellent.
In merch news, and I guess specifically food news, we have word
tasty.
Here. Ah, tasty! we have word here that Maruchan Instant Noodles, or specifically Instant Lunch, has announced a collaboration with Pac-Man. So that's going to be a new way to enjoy Pac-Man while eating your food.
Woo! I mean, LOL, but they also did a huge tie-in with Final Fantasy 15, which was amazing. I say huge, but like huge to me.
Yeah. They had also to celebrate the, I think it was the 20th anniversary of the Bandai Namco group, which we had actually just talked about that merger a few episodes ago, that we were looking back on Bandai Namco's history. But basically, yeah, for the other promo that they had released to celebrate this was showing a giant Pac-Man chasing a Gundam RX-78-2. So like the classic one you see piloted by Amuro Ray in First Gundam. Just really cute stuff. I like when they celebrate Pac-Man. Pac-Man is wonderful. This 45th anniversary celebration instant ramen is something I am going to look for when I'm at the store.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, he's as old as I am, basically. A little older, technically. What did you say?
I was like, yeah. I mean, I'm almost as old as you, so that was not me being ageist.
Ah, In other merch news, we also have word here of a new Final Fantasy capsule toy. These are specifically Final Fantasy 14, like SD character acrylics. I think they're really cute. They're all based on like the wind up minion appearance styles.
Yes.
And, you know, since they're just Gashapon prizes, I guess they cost 4 100 yen coins. So at the current exchange rate, it's like $2.60 each. Just really cute little acrylic standee characters. I would really like to get some of these.
Yeah, I would like most of these, if not all.
Right. And then we had another merch news that I had specifically tagged for you. I thought you'd be excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, this is a merch drop, I guess you could say, a collaboration with Wind and Sea, who I had not been familiar with, but I did a little research, and I believe they are a streetwear brand in Japan. That was the best I was able to find. But the exciting thing is that they are currently holding a Parappa Halloween event at their Gotemba outlet in Japan as we speak. By the time you listen to it, it will probably have come and gone. There will be apparel, or rather there is apparel, plushies, and stickers. I don't know if this will ever come stateside, but I gotta believe.
Right. I have to be honest. Normally, I wouldn't have us talking about something that is going to be wrapping as the episode goes live. I'm trying a lot harder to be better about that. However, in this particular case, I felt like we had to talk about it. It's literally the only Parappa the Rapper news we've had in a long time.
Right. Even though the news is wrapping, so is Parappa. Hey. Like, there's even a little plush of PJ Barry. When do you see PJ Barry merch? Like, seriously.
Well, and that's part of it, too, though, is to make sure you, Slaggy, know that, like, there's some new Parappa merch floating around out there. So, like, you might want to check Ami Ami and other sites to see if they have any.
Yeah, that big Parappa plush is so cute.
Likewise, there's actually a cute arcade prize that is being distributed in Japanese arcades. Actually, starting this past weekend, so now, it is a plush replica of the PS1, but it's a little larger, actually, than the original PlayStation actually was, so it's almost like a cushion pillow. I think it looks really cute. I want one of these so bad. I'm absolutely going to be checking out the various import sites to see if I can find one anywhere.
That's so cute. It would make a great pillow. Pillow, yeah. Station 1.
And likewise, we got word of an upcoming Gashapon series prize. These are going to be miniature keychain replicas of PlayStation 4 and 3 game cases, specifically Uncharted and Last of Us, with one mystery game that I'm hoping is going to be like Shadow of the Colossus or something. I think they're really cool. They do appear to have little miniature replica discs inside of them, even.
Oh, my God.
I love these kinds of collectibles. I really have a soft spot for them. So I will likewise probably be trying to see if I can find any of these in any of the online import places.
That's super funny. I want to get some and then get a Barbie and make her like import game Barbie.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Teen Otaku Barbie. And then we also had word of a new Nintendo Switch Online update. This one is interesting because it has one of your favorite games, Slaggy. That, of course, being Bubsy in Claws Encounters of the Furred Kind. It also has Fatal Fury Special and, quite interestingly, the previously Japanese exclusive Super Nintendo puzzle game that uses the mouse controller, Mario and Wario. This is a really interesting one, especially for fans of the sort of weirder side of Nintendo's history. Saiki, what do you think?
I think it's really cool that we have Mario and Wario. I am surprised about Bubsy because we have the Bubsy pack, whatever that was called.
I was really surprised because we're just getting that new Bubsy retro collection, and you don't usually see third parties sign off on these types of distribution deals when they have those kinds of packs coming.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. What
could possibly go wrong?
We also got, and this was real late breaking news. It actually was literally breaking just in the last 10 hours. But basically, a new teaser website has popped up for the beloved fan favorite Square Enix series, Dissidia Final Fantasy. It appears that this new iteration, based on the website, is going to be a iOS Android team boss battle arena game. There will be more info coming October 14th. It's interesting because a lot of the art that has been teased so far is about like a setting that looks very much like modern day Japan, or perhaps even Quadratum from Kingdom Hearts 4. Right. There's also some art on the website that indicates some of the classic Final Fantasy characters sort of isekai'd to this setting, and perhaps in a couple of cases even just wearing like some modern clothes to reflect the setting. It's looking like really interesting stuff. A lot of us are concerned that it is going to be a new AR game and that it's going to be like recycled assets from the canceled Kingdom Hearts Missing Key. I'm hoping when I hear Team Boss Battle Arena that this is going to be their stab at like a Final Fantasy MOBA. If you recall back when Pokemon Unite had released and we got really into that being the Pokemon MOBA, Slaggy, you and I had talked a lot about Final Fantasy, and I think maybe even discussed using Dissidia sublicensing as like, oh, it'd be cute if they did a Final Fantasy MOBA. So that's what I'm hoping for. Either way, the next update is going to be coming on the morning of October 14th. So by the time you hear this, likely, yeah, you will know more than we know now. Time works funny that way, but please look forward to it, and please look forward to us talking more about it once we know what it looks like.
Yeah, and if you want to not miss that announcement on October 14th, I mean, probably it already happened, but hopefully you already know about it and you've set your alarmo. If so, you can get a Kirby and the Forgotten Land Nintendo Switch 2 Edition plus Star-Crossed World imagery, because that is now available as a free download for Alarmo owner.
All right. Well, we've had a lovely time here at the club, but obviously, eventually, we all have to go to our own private homes or to our own.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
Yeah, so this is a follow-up on the Mind's Eye failed launch and the subsequent layoffs at Build a Rocket Boy, which we talked about quite a bit a couple months ago. So we have word that 93 current and former workers have signed an open letter to Build a Rocket Boy, citing lack of transparency and communication, unbearable levels of overtime, which was an extra 8 hours per week, a disastrous handling of redundancies. Additionally, that Leslie Benzies, who's the head of the studio, and co-CEO Mark Gerhard had repeatedly refused to listen to their workforce's years of experience, resulting in one of the worst video game launches this decade. Also mentioning that the crunch not only resulted in mental health issues, but also physical illnesses. So like way more than the typical burnout that you would get from crunch, that like it was just really poorly impacting the staff. So it is so bad that the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain's Games Workers Group is going to be filing legal action against Build a Rocket Boy for the mishandling of the redundancy process. And yeah, I'd like to see Build a Rocket Boy try to blame this on Rockstar saboteurs, I guess.
Yeah, I honestly, power to the workers. I'm really happy to
Indeed.
I'm really happy to hear that they're taking steps, and I hope that things go well for the workforce.
Wait, can we even talk about pro-worker sentiment, or do we have to watch our language?
That's a genuine question to ask in 2025, and I think it's a major bummer.
I guess my answer is no, a cyclist.
Yeah, it's
follow me.
I believe so.
Welcome to New York.
We have a interesting news update here. This is about Yakuza Kiwami 3.
Oh, yeah.
So we had mentioned previously that Yakuza Kiwami 3 had been announced. As well as its new companion game, Dark Ties, or I should say companion scenario. And the developers were saying that Kiwami 3 kind of represents a new approach to the Kiwami series. As we had previously discussed, when they made Kiwami 1 and 2, they were at the time just kind of doing a technical upgrade to port the game up to or up from the PlayStation 2 version of the engine to the newer, higher spec engine that they were working on the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 eras. Now, for the new Kiwami 3, they're not only adapting it on a technical level, but they're also going to be adapting the story and game a little more. They're going to be really taking a broader approach to upgrading more aspects and facets of the entire presentation rather than just the technical presentation, which I actually think is a big positive. I know that certain people like to complain about supposed censorship when problematic elements of a game are removed, but occasionally there's stuff in these games that, you know, just doesn't age well, and having some, you know, prostitution sub-stories removed where women are not treated well is not, to me, necessarily always going to be a bad thing, as a very general, generic example, because that is the type of allegation that has often been levied at specifically the Ryuga Gotoku series. It's like, did you have any thoughts on any of that?
No, I just, I'm glad that the Ryuga Gotoku series is kind of just thriving these days.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, to that end, we also had gotten word that initially the Dark Ties scenario was actually just going to be like a Kingdom Hearts style playable movie. But that, you know, the more they sort of dug into it, the more they realized that this was their real best chance to sort of take this opportunity and develop this side story into a full game. And so they took advantage and went for it, which I think is broadly extremely positive.
Yeah. And if they put it out on Switch 2, they can call it Yakuza Kiwami 3 Nintendo Switch 2 Edition plus Dark Ties.
I have to say, that feels very likely to me, given the Yakuza. In fact, they are releasing a Switch 2 version.
Yeah, they are. They are. I realize
it's already going to be. Yeah. How funny.
Yeah. The funny thing is that I was like, why aren't they calling it like a Dragon Kiwami? I'm like, I guess because when it was released, it was Yakuza 3. And so.
Yeah, I think in retrospect now, we're going to see them doing the older series games and just still treating it under that Yakuza branding. And then the newer series, I think they'll go with the Like a Dragon. And I think for the sake of keeping things clearly communicated, that it's probably a good thing, even though it rolls off the tongue very strange to me now.
Indeed.
Talking about late breaking news, literally, I only heard about this game for the first time ever while I was walking my dogs pre-show. But this game was just announced this morning. I got the update from you, Slaggy. This is Avatar Legends, the fighting game. And it came complete with a trailer. I will leave it to you listeners to watch the trailer and render your own judgment. We will link you over at GameBuoy.org, of course.
GameBuoy.org, of course.
Some description or some details about the game have been pulled from the Steam page description. The game is apparently going to have 12 playable characters at launch with, and I quote, many more released via season model, selectable support characters that influence your fighting style and grant special moves, a unique flow system with movement-centric gameplay, and what they describe as best-in-class netcode and crossplay, and which the announcement had specifically suggested was going to be rollback-based. And people are broadly, you know, excited on a technical level. I will say for me, watching the trailer, it does look very early or maybe even just a little jank. Not in a way that I'm still not inclined to support. I like 2D fighters a lot. I really appreciate the fact that they're going with a sprite visual style that looks really authentic to the show. But I really can't help but notice that for all of the jokes about, you know, two-frame fighting game idol poses, these were some literal two-frame idol poses, I tell you what.
Yeah, yeah. I did notice very clearly on there it said pre-alpha footage. So, like, hopefully it was more just a kind of concept trailer.
Yeah, I am really hoping it's more for proof of concept at this point, but I will definitely be supporting this. It's a genre that I really like. It's a property I really like. Unless they completely flub the gameplay, I'll likely still check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. We have yet another follow-up. This one was also from the summer. We talked back in July about how one of the gung-ho shareholders, specifically a group called Strategic Capital, who is a shareholder of Gung-Ho, was encouraging the company to fire the current CEO, Kazuki Morishita-san. We now have an update that after a shareholders meeting at the end of September, Gung-Ho has rejected that proposal and has defended Morishita and his contributions to the company. However, they did listen to one of the shareholders' demands about the relaxing the requirements to remove an executive. So
interesting. I wonder if that doesn't presage a future story unto itself, though.
Yeah. So we'll have to see if things are gung-ho for Gung-Ho or no go. Oh,
indeed.
No.
Ah. Well, we have here word of something I'm excited about. We have the dates for the new All Saints Wake event in Final Fantasy XIV. This is, of course, the stand-in event for Halloween. It will be starting this year on October 17th, so just about a week away. I'm really excited this year. One of the rewards is a pumpkin butler mount, and I think it looks absolutely adorable.
Amazing. I need to dig out my pumpkin helmet to wear while I ride around on it.
Yeah, I do a little Halloween glam every year too, and it's time. It's time. Oh my god.
And the poster looks so emo.
Yeah, no, it's so good.
Get ready to plaster that over the Free Company house.
Right. We also have word here that per the November issue of Kadokawa's Comic Flapper magazine, that the upcoming manga adaptation of Suikoden Star Leap, this is the upcoming new Suikoden game, is going to be launching in the next issue of the magazine, which will be launching on November 5th. The manga is specifically titled Genso Suikoden Star Leap Hoshiboshi no Kiseki, or, Suikoden Star Leap Star Trails. I'm really excited about this just in the sense that I like manga adaptations. I like Suikoden. I think it's really cool that this is being done by the same person that did the Suikoden 3 manga adaptation. Again, I know a lot of us have a lot of concerns about this Suikoden Star Leap game. Obviously, Suikoden getting an official continuation that is a mobile game is a scary thought, but by all accounts, it sounds like they're doing as much right as they possibly could be. Is that your sense as well?
I think they're doing the best they can.
Honestly, sometimes that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, Konami's at least acknowledging a franchise. It's a step forward.
Absolutely. We also have word here, the recent Arc System Works anime fighting game Hunter x Hunter Nen Impact is going to be getting a new DLC character. This is releasing on October 16th, the first character in the game's first season pass. This is Neferpitu. I'm not going to speak too much more about this, but if you are, like myself, a fan of Hunter x Hunter, this is exciting times, because we also have word coming out of Bushiroad, the publisher, that the Hunter x Hunter Nen survival roguelike game is going to be releasing worldwide on iOS and Android in 2026. It's going to be free to play and will have microtransactions.
Oh, all right, Hunter x Hunter Hunties.
The thing is, it's a survivor game in the style of, like, Vampire Survivors. So, like, Hunter x Hunter and Vampire Survivors, like, please sign me up.
Yeah, and I assume you are going to sign up.
Absolutely.
for like pre-download or whatever. Something that I am looking forward to downloading soon is a new indie game that's in early access on Steam. It's called Aethermancer. Basically, it is a spin on the Pokemon Nuzlocke Challenge. If anyone's not familiar with Nuzlocke, it is a challenge that was started by a webcomic artist where you could only catch the first Pokemon in an area. And then if your Pokemon gets knocked out, it's considered permadeath and you have to release the Pokemon. That webcomic has unfortunately not aged well due to some jokes that are in poor taste. However, the challenge has continued to remain popular, even though Nintendo has refused to officially acknowledge it in their official channels. I think we actually talked about that on air. So this is kind of a twist on that whole idea. It's a Pokemon roguelike, basically. So this will feature 28 different creatures in 3v3 combat with a deep skill system, their words. And they state that if a monster dies in combat, you lose it permanently, but you have the power to defy death by rebirthing their souls. Woo. So it sounds like it's like not going to be the same monster, but it will have like their soul. I don't know, but it sounds really cool. I've never done a Nuzlocke challenge, but anything...
Yeah, I honestly, I get so attached to individual Pokemon that I catch that the very idea of doing a Nuzlocke is really hard for me.
Right, right. But in a game where this is part of the mechanics of it, sounds like it might be kind of cool. So I probably going to check this out.
Excellent. We also got word of a new story update coming to Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis. This is the beginning of the end of the first soldier storyline that has been being told. Of course, for those of you who don't recall, Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis is the mobile title that purports to tell all of the individual compilation of Final Fantasy VII stories within one game. The First Soldier was the Final Fantasy VII spin-off battle royale game for mobile that, in infamous Square Enix memory, got eliminated or end of service promptly after, I think, its first year anniversary or something. They've still been telling the story from that game via Ever Crisis, and the end of the story, episode 3X Soldiers, went live this month, which is, my understanding, the beginning of the end of the First Soldier story. So, you know, please look forward to that storytelling through to its conclusion.
All right. And last but certainly not least, we have the announcement of the next DLC boss from the Sega Villain stage in Shinobi Art of Vengeance. This is the Dark Daddy Death Adder from Golden Axe.
And he is ablicious, honey.
Oh, I mean, he is definitely in top form. So...
More like top me form.
Yeah. Because that sort of homoerotic content might be controversial, by which I mean our thirsting over a video game villain, I suppose it's time that we talk about things that are...
controversial.
Oh my god.
All right. So kind of tying into what you were talking about a little earlier, not quite as much as the story that you're going to talk about in a bit, but still tying into it a little, we have a link that is from Automaton, who will link to you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where you can find all the links to anything we discuss on the show, if you didn't know. Automaton gives some great news. Unfortunately, this is not on them, but the news that they are sharing is not so great. This is information coming out of the Computer Entertainment Suppliers Association, or CESA, from Japan. They are the organization behind Tokyo Game Show. They released a preview of their 2025 CESA Video Game Industry Report. They collected responses from 54 different game companies in Japan between June and July of this year, and they have found that approximately 51% of the companies use generative AI in their game development process, including visual assets and images such as characters, story/text generation, and programming support, with 30% 2% of these companies using AI to develop in-house engine. Some of these companies include Level 5, Capcom, and Sega. Notably, the Automaton article cited some earlier discussions Nintendo had about AI, saying wait and see is kind of their approach. I really, really hope Nintendo doesn't go into the AI route.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Level 5 was sharing, like, oh, we used it to render some crowds in, I think it was the Inazuma 7, Inazuma 11? Whatever the number
would
is.
Be, the number, I believe, would be 11.
Right, right. That they used Stable Diffusion to, like, render the little tiny people in the crowd in the soccer stadium. It's like, really? Just can't you use the dot tool for that or something?
Right. Well, and because, like, I'll say I'm playing through Super Robot Wars right now, and every so often I'll see an asset where I'm like, okay, the dimensions of that art really don't make sense. Was this drawn by someone who was, like, really young in their art career, or was this drawn by a robot? Because I don't see how a person would have drawn this and made this mistake if they were, like, if I can see it and I'm not, you know, that much of an artist, I'm not quite sure how y'all didn't see it. It's just like some really, really weird, like, columns that don't line up type stuff, like the type of stuff that frankly happens in AI art. I don't care for it. I would be much happier. I'd even, again, literally be willing, like, for me, I would rather pay for an $80 Nintendo game with no AI than a $70 Sony game that I know does have AI. Like, for me, that's how strong I feel about it. I'd rather pay a little more to know it's not present in the game. And those were just general examples. I don't know Nintendo is using. I don't know Sony isn't. What have you. In general, I would rather pay a little more for artwork created by real people for the consumption of real people, rather than a game that is made of artwork that nobody was passionate enough to create.
Yeah, so a little doomy and gloomy.
Indeed. We also had a controversial news story here. Basically, Street Fighter VI, right? The Capcom Cup happens for these Street Fighter games in the modern era now. It's like the big end of year tournament that is like the culmination of all of like the various minors brackets and what have you from the other events that go on throughout the year. This has been happening since Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition era. So like 2023 or 2013. Brains are funny. It's been free to watch online, and frankly, a lot of us have watched it. This year, however, Capcom has announced that the top 12 finals are going to be a pay-per-view event behind a cash money paywall. And it's also worth noting the online ticket price, if you wanted a both-day streaming ticket, costs like $40. So we're not just talking about like a $5 buy-in with the money going to the Capcom Cup final winner, which frankly I think is the type of thing people would actually be okay with. Rather, this is more like premier event concert tickets, or like if you're gonna, the type of money you'd be expecting to pay to stream one of the Final Fantasy 14 Rock Band concert streams. Having it be this stream for watching a tournament gameplay has rubbing a lot of us the wrong way in the community, I tell you what.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting, in fact, that at least outwardly facing, we have received indications that the developers of the game were also shocked, quote unquote, also shocked about the pay-per-view ticket announcement. And at least frontward facing to us, we are being told that internal discussions about this topic are still ongoing. So we will keep you posted over here on the show as we get updates. I'm not sure why you would have to go to GameBuie.org for that. But obviously, I think this is a real scummy move. I absolutely will not be supporting it. And I think there is a real, I think there's a real reason not to support this, even if you want to watch it, frankly. I don't think this is a good thing to encourage. And I would strongly suggest that if you are planning to watch this, at least find a pirate stream or something for real.
Mm.
We also have a really great article here on Automaton. The headline is, "Why are Disney and Marvel protected, but Japanese IPs aren't? OpenAI's Sora 2 sparks controversy in Japan over infringement concerns." And, you know, it's kind of like what we were alluding to earlier, right? That you can ostensibly get it to make all kinds of fake anime character stuff. Like in the article that they cite, you know, there are people who on, you know, day one that the Sora 2 model went up, they were using it to create like fan made like Goku versus Saitama fights clips. And I mean, again, the clip is here. You can watch it yourself that people are doing this. So the fact that you can't generate like Disney and Marvel IPs, which are sort of, you know, American IPs on the same level, it all seems really, how do I say this, geopolitical. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really worth thinking on why these models were built this way. And I can already imagine what some of the bad faith excuses will be, but I don't think they're going to be representative of the actual reason. And I think the actual reason is pretty simple and pretty gross.
Yeah. And now we are going to move on to some Game Pass news. This is the announcement that the price of Game Pass Ultimate has increased by $10 a month from its original $19.99 a month to now being $29.99 a month. It's also possibly worth noting that the lower two tiers have been renamed Standard and Essential. I honestly don't remember what they used to be called. I did not save mental space for that information. Microsoft tried to kind of justify this by saying, oh, we have many more day one games on Game Pass that we used to have now. Oh, by the way, all people can now do cloud streaming on all tiers. And it also is worth noting, to be fair, that this now includes the cost of Fortnite Crew and Ubisoft Plus Classics. But if you were someone...
Well, I was going to say, within the very specific framework of Game Pass Ultimate subscribers who also were already subscribing to, you know, Crew or Ubi Plus, for that limited band of people, this could be perceived as a positive change.
Please right, continue. But for people who are not in that situation, then, you know, it would not be beneficial.
Yeah, this would otherwise be a fairly large price increase.
Right. Especially when you are seeing things like the other two tiers, Standard and Essential, getting PC games as part of theirs. Like, so they are getting things added for no increase to their price, but the Ultimate is getting a pretty big jump. But for the time being, you can be picking up a code at major retailers such as GameStop, Amazon, Walmart, Best Buy, and Target. You can decide where you feel comfortable spending your dollars based on their business practices or whatever. They are selling the codes at a price point of $19.99, but this possibly might just be while that stock lasts. So if you are someone who is paying for Game Pass, this might be something for you. Also, as I was reading these to get ready for the show today, I saw a related story about how people who are canceling Game Pass are getting some kind of intrusive ads that like are filling up their homepages, including like full screen ads about like you could be getting all these things with Game Pass when you boot up your Xbox. So it's like, ooh.
So this is definitely happening because I've gotten these before. I don't personally feel they're particularly intrusive, but it is a, you know, because you can just back out of it with one button press and they load up basically instantaneously. But I have a pretty high tolerance to this type of stuff. It is definitely really happening. And especially if you're someone who is particularly aggrieved by ads, like it can be a real bother.
Yeah, for some people, this is so controversial.
Absolutely. And then the last one I wanted to point out that was really controversial that I had seen in the news this week and that I thought really needed to be discussed was the early access release of the League of Legends fighting game 2XKO. Basically, they have skins for the characters available as microtransactions, but in order to access the skins that are based on the beloved animated series Arcane, for Vi, Jinx, and Echo, you have to buy the $100 Ultra Starter Edition. There's no way to buy the skins for the character individual or in any bundle separate from the Ultra Starter Edition bundle. This is obviously quite controversial, as the animation Arcane was, for a lot of people who aren't into MOBAs, their entry point into this IP. So seeing these particular skins being gatekept behind a large purchase that way, rather than one of the smaller purchases that are also present in the in-game store, has quite a few people crying foul. Slaggy, yeah. I personally think that $100 is too much to be putting exclusives behind. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, even if it's a timed exclusive, like, still, that's not good.
And I will say, I don't love having exclusive cosmetics in the big bundles altogether, but at least if they're more generic or something, you know, I don't get so bent out of shape. But in this case, it's literally your anime skins, like your the skins from your anime adaptation that everybody was excited about. I just think it's a bad look.
This isn't like just, oh, it's a cute layered armor for Monster Hunter. Like,
where it's still not ideal, but at least you can accept it. Like, this is something that's actively drawing people to the game, and then they can't get it unless they spend money that, frankly, a lot of us right now don't have.
Oops, not good.
Indeed. It's all very doomy and gloomy, which makes this a perfect time for us to talk about
doom and gloom.
Yeah.
Well, if you were hoping to enjoy your Pac-Man Maruchan instant lunch with a rousing game of Pac-Man Mega Tunnel Battle Chomp Champs, which I have to be honest, I didn't realize there was another Pac-Man Battle Royale style game.
Well, so this was the original Mega Tunnel Battle, as I recall. Was this the Stadia developed one? And then now this version is the non-Stadia version, or is this the battle royale that came to life after they ended Pac-Man 99?
I don't know. R.I.P.
Right.
So, unfortunately, the game will stop being offered for sale on November 1st, and gameplay services will end on December 31st. So now you have no Pac-Man battle royale until
it is both things. This is the game that they adapted for Switch after ending Pac-Man 99, but it is an adaptation of the original release of Pac-Man Mega Tunnel Battle on Stadia back in 2020.
Yeah, so now you have no Battle Royale for Pac-Man until they inevitably add Pac-Man into Fortnite.
Don't you put that on the world.
It's going to happen. Imagine the upright Scooby-Doo skin, but Pac-Man with arms and legs and like a human proportion body.
Oh, no. We also have a somewhat depressing update here about the upcoming, or presently in early access, Princess Maker Children of Revelation. Basically, the developer, DZARD, recently underwent an abrupt restructuring and has halted all development. This game has been being developed under official license from Gainax. The publisher still insists that the game will be completed and that the previously announced updates will still occur. They will just be happening on a protracted timeline while the restructuring woes get put to rest. I don't know yet exactly how this looks for all the parties involved. I hope the game still comes out, that the fans of the series are happy with it. But broadly speaking, yikes, not a good story to see.
Yeah.
We also had, I thought, was a really good article. You linked me to this one, Slaggy. This was about trying to get a job in video games right now is like crawling through hell. This is being run on Aftermath. That was the full headline, and the article was written by Luke Plunkett. It is headed As a header, Illustration has an incredible piece of artwork titled "Thank You Again for Your Interest," which is a composite of 60 rejection letters that the artist compiled and overlaid over one another. It's a really powerful piece of art that, for me, really underlined the hopelessness and inhumanity that people looking for employment in the games space are facing right now. Psyche, because you linked this to me, did you have anything particularly that you wanted to call out about this article?
No, I always appreciate when Aftermath gets these sorts of kind of behind the scenes stories, because these are the stories that need to be talked about in games media, and they often aren't.
Yeah. Well, and to that end, this article does in fact tell a fair number of individual stories. Quite a few individuals who provide pseudonyms, because obviously they're not going to do this under their real name, provide anonymous stories about some of the studios that they had worked at and sort of their woes about trying to get employed and frankly frequently getting ghosted at best by some of these supposed employment opportunities. It just sounds really dire out there and really unfortunate, while also tracking with what I have heard colloquially from friends that are working in that space.
Yeah, yeah. So that's just not good.
Indeed. We also got the announcement of the end of service for the English and Japanese versions of 2.5-dimensional Seduction, Angels on Stage mobile game. Both for iOS and Android devices, this launched last September. It will run through January 14th. We also got word, and unfortunately, I think a lot of folks had already had their eyes on this studio with concerns that this might occur, but Funcom is closing the studio behind Metal Hellsinger. This is The Outsiders. This kind of sucks, obviously. I say kind of. It always super sucks when this stuff happens. Funcom has been doing layoffs for a while. It sucks to see a studio established about a decade ago getting effectively wiped out by it. I don't really have a whole lot more to say other than just that, you know, our hearts and thoughts go out to you all and that we really hope that you find gainful employment quickly and painlessly. And I think you had this next one for us.
Yeah. So this is coming from PC Gamer, and they have let us know that Remedy has issued a profit warning for 2025 due to the underperformance of new multiplayer shooter FBC Firebreak, which, if that was supposed to be on my radar, most definitely wasn't. The kind of silver lining here is that there are no announcements of cuts at the studio at this time, but, you know, this doesn't look good, so.
Yeah, this game is, from my understanding, like a soft control spinoff, so it should be on your radar. The fact that it isn't, I think, is probably Remedy's big issue. Yeah. There's a real problem right now where there's so many major games out where even a lot of really solid mid-tier games just get completely overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, especially with this being a shooter, like, that's a pretty oversaturated market right now for a genre that's already quite packed as it is. So
absolutely. All right, well, I'm happy to report we do have a smash hit for you this week. This is, of course, the segment where we try our best to uplift a news story that we thought really caught our eyes as being particularly well written, executed, presented, important for the moment. There are a lot of reasons why we feel the need to buoy these smash hits. But here we are bringing it to you every week. Or not. Smash hit! This week, our smash hit is a piece that was run over on gamesindustry.biz.
Gamesindustry.biz.
The headline is Tokyo Game Show, Flashy Booths Mask Economic and Industry Anxiety. Run as an opinion piece. Oh,
you said flashy booths, right? Not flashy boobs.
Yes, I did.
Sorry.
So basically the article was about, and, you know, it's funny you saying flashy boobs this way. I know you're doing a gag, but one of the almost like recession indicators that they were looking at was like some of the like over the top glamorousness of the games presentations and booths that maybe wasn't in effect at the show. I also really appreciated that generally speaking, this article is really rife with like relatively in-depth and thorough research, citing specific data points and specific numbers as to why the writer is come to this conclusion. Basically that, you know, a lot of the people present, a lot of the workers in the Japanese games space, frankly, seem to share a lot of the concerns that we've been talking about recently on the show. And it appears to really have reflected in the attitudes and atmosphere of Tokyo Game Show, even if, you know, they had been trying to put on a brave front and act like things were still business as usual. I think it's going to be a real interesting next couple of years, depending on how things go. So I think that this is in line with that. And I think it's worth reading in its entirety. It's a really great read. And it's, for me at least, worth internalizing and thinking about in the future. All of that having been done and all of that having been said. Oh, Saigi, did you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, it's just almost a little doom and gloom adjacent.
I mean, literally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, then all of this having been done, all of this having been said, let us talk about some news that is more a maybe. You know, we serve it to you every week, your place for gossip, rumor mongering, and all other manner of hearsay. Rumor has it.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
I am glad Adele has not sent us a cease and desist. Can you imagine if Adele's listening? She's like, how dare they use my smash hit, Rumor Has It, without permission?
I'd like to think that she has more important things on her mind.
She's over there listening. She's like, oh, I can't wait until they get to Rumor Has It, because they sing a karaoke version of my hit, Rumor Has It. So Adele probably is not aware of this rumor, but if you are a listener of the show, you probably are, because we kind of talked a little bit about this when we were talking about the rumblings that there would be upcoming announcements at the upcoming Halo World Championships. This rumor has kind of taken a little more form now. You know, we kind of had the hint that we thought Halo Combat Evolved was going to be getting a remake. Now the rumors are that this remake is going to be developed by Virtuos, who is responsible for the recent Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion remaster that came out. So, interesting.
Yeah. The panel that this announcement is expected to be made at is happening on October 24th, Friday. So presumably we'll be talking about this next episode, and this will no longer be a rumor, but a confirmo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is that something you set your alarm out for? A confirmo?
We also have a theoretical shop place listing leak. This is word that here over the weekend, Assassin's Creed Shadows has popped up on some European retailers, complete with what appears to be pretty specific like release information, box art. It does appear to be a game key card. So obviously, given the fact that Ubisoft had previously ported Star Wars Outlaws to great acclaim, it's worth noting, by all accounts, that's meant to be a very solid port. Maybe the same thing is going to be happening with Assassin's Creed Shadows. And honestly, if it runs well and is as good as Star Wars Outlaws had been, I think that's a great thing. I enjoyed Shadows a lot. Saiki, do you have any thought on that?
I hope that that happens and that it does well on the platform, despite being a game key card.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, I presume for Assassin's Creed, it would be similar to what we heard out of the Star Wars guys, where the Ubi engine is made with the expectation of SSD transfer speeds, in which again, I think that the game card issue, I think it's not quite apples to apples. Yeah. Again, like if that's your only option, I think it's fair. I just don't like it being the de facto standard for third parties such that they can maximize profits.
Yeah.
That context is important to me.
For sure. So this next one is kind of fun. This is that there has been a image spotted online of a new glider for Fortnite. Now, this normally might not be a big deal, but this glider features Kane and Kodos, the aliens from The Simpsons. And it has a little description that says, "Can you believe it, Kodos? They left us out of the battle pass." So a lot of people are really, really thinking that this is kind of concrete proof that the long-rumored Simpsons mini-season that we have kind of expected would be coming, will be coming soon.
Yeah, I think the expectation right now is that the mini-season would probably be November, like between, like something basically to pad out between Fort Nightmares and Winterfest, if I understand the current speculation, which frankly for me, that would be perfect. That's the perfect little window of time to pop in a little 5 to 6 week mini season. You want to give me a little Simpsons little mini pass that I can fill out and get. I actually think this would be a great idea. I hope this is true. I've heard the Simpsons mini season rumors for months, and now seeing this asset in game, it's like, okay, starting to believe.
I really hope that there's a little Springfield map and that, like, you could set the Skinner's house on fire and then you'll hear, "Seymour, the house is on fire." No, mother, it's just the Northern Lights.
Right? Like, if we don't get Evergreen Lane or whatever as a little district in Fortnite, I would at least hope that one of the smaller modes, either Blitz or Reload, which both typically do themed maps, I would at least hope then that one of them would do like a whole ass Springfield in that case, right? And frankly, if they did Reload and it was Springfield and it was just like a little like simulacrum of Springfield, obviously it wouldn't be literally adapted, but figuratively adapted. I'd probably start dropping Reload every day for a couple weeks. So I feel like there are so many cool things they could do with a potential Simpsons mini season. I really hope they do execute on some of
them. Yeah, I would definitely do 22 short drops about Springfield.
Ah, that's cute. All right. Well, last but certainly not least, before we transition into our discussion this week, we have word here. And this is being run on The Gamer, and it is according to alleged staff. But their reporting goes that Target and Walmart are presumably, allegedly, pulling their Xbox stock. I will note, I have seen reports on this pop up somewhat organically, or at least as organically as the modern internet can be, both on Reddit as well as Era, one of the message boards that I post on that I've mentioned previously. Supposedly employees have noted that you know, their Targets and their Walmarts are basically taking stuff off of store shelves. A lot of them are posting photographic evidence to go with it. I haven't shopped at a Target in a really long time, and the area I'm in famously doesn't have Walmarts. So so I am kind of in the dark on this in a real sense. But if so, I really have to say, despite the fact that Xbox is consistently indicating, Microsoft signaling that the next Xbox is still on track, that everything is still going to be going according to plan, it's really hard on our end not to be wondering some questions, really, right? Like, we have reports also here on Era, and although we typically try not to link Era threads, we may link this one over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Since we're referring to it directly, basically people are using the Microsoft in-store stock tracker to try and find Xbox Series unit models, be them Series X, Series S, or even like used or reconditioned units. And basically across Spain, Italy, Netherlands, Belgium, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, Norway, Luxembourg, Switzerland, and Austria are returning zero hits for any consoles from Microsoft stores officially.
Wow.
When you pair this with what we were just talking about Target and Walmart, even despite Microsoft's insistence that everything is fine, it certainly looks like a house that's on fire from the outside.
No, Mother, it's just the Northern Lights.
I mean, that's a perfect way to bring it back.
For me, you know, knowing that we have the Xbox ROG Ally is a thing, I really think that what we've kind of been talking about for a while is that Xbox will kind of just live on as a platform, but not as consoles, dedicated consoles developed by Microsoft, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think that is one of the big questions a lot of us have right now is the future going to be the rumored hybrid PC/console that is licensed out to, you know, Asus and other developers or hardware manufacturers? Microsoft going to stay with their own marketing division but start doing, or their own hardware division but start doing a more open-ended platform? I guess we just don't really know the exact shape of it yet, and I think that is where a lot of our questions are really coming from. For me, even though I have invested a lot in the Microsoft platform to a certain amount of regret, given the current geopolitical stuff, I will say, for me, if the platform continues to persist with Microsoft making hardware, but it is also the PC hybrid format, I would probably still have some amount of interest. But I start to get real concerned when it's just licensed out boxes, because then it's like, well, then what does this have on a tech level that my PC that I built doesn't already have, right?
Yep. Microsoft to Xbox branded TVs, Microsoft Xbox branded car in car. But,
I mean, I guess the flip of it is, even in this scenario, maybe even if I'm not buying Xbox hardware anymore, presuming the geopolitical of it gets sorted out, maybe I'm still a frequent Microsoft consumer, games studio consumer in that instance. And, yeah, you know, maybe that's what they're trying to swing. Yeah. Maybe that's what they're trying to swing, right? So I'm really interested in what the future holds, because right now it seems like we're looking at a tire fire and they're insisting this is not a tire fire. So I kind of think it is and they're just lying, but we'll see.
Wasn't there a tire fire in Springfield too?
Yes, famously. Oh, I love that.
All right.
All right. Well, all that having been done, all that having been said, it is time for Grand Theft Autumn, Where Is Your Buoy? Taking a look at some of our favorite games for autumnal kickback vibes. All right, as you may have noticed, this week we're taking a breath and discussing something exceptionally subjective. This is, of course, our favorite games and themes, by which I guess I kind of meant more like series or just general vibes, that we like to invest time into as the shadows get long and the trees lose their foliage. As noted in the introduction to today's episode, our conversation today was inspired in part by my own annual tradition of revisiting the Zelda series during the Thanksgiving holiday. We will be talking about games through the lens of comfort plays and cozy gaming, and while cozy games may come up as a part of this conversation, it's very much worth noting that this is not an episode about the genre cozy games. However, maybe we will talk about cozy games sometime, because that's like a whole ass genre that's popped up. And also, I just, as a note, this was kind of a fun topic for me because it actually challenged me to think about what I'll be padding the rest of my 2025 gaming calendar with. It's the fall, and like I was really literally like, oh, what am I expecting to play that I play every year over the next few months? And I worked it out, right? So with all that having been done and said, I think it will just dig into it. The easiest game for me to talk about is The Legend of Zelda. For me, I revisit this series every fall. I think the reason is because my original Ocarina playthrough, Ocarina of Time, of course, it came out November 21st of whatever freaking year that was in the 90s.
98, I think.
That sounds right. And so basically, me and my good buddy Jason, who did in fact appear here on the show as a guest on one episode, as Seawolf Jason, we basically had set up two small TVs. And of course, small TVs was a different thing in the 90s than it is now.
Like, so we were, miniature.
Well, yeah, it was literally, they were both literally like 13 or 17 inches or smaller than the computer monitor I'm using to record this episode on. Let me put it wow. that way. Right. We set these two screens up side by side. I had my Nintendo 64. He brought his over from his place. And we spent the entire, because it came out on like the 21st, and the Thanksgiving holiday was like that upcoming weekend. So we spent the whole weekend camped out at my parents' place. You know, we would dig in, and for meals, we would just go out and get 20-piece chicken nuggets for every meal. And this was obviously, this was the holiday season, right? I don't even really go to McDonald's anymore, but we, at the time, were getting the apple cinnamon dipping sauce because it was the thing that they used to do for McDonald's holidays. And I'll note, you know, they still every so often do bring it back seasonally. And when they do, I do frequent McDonald's. As a result, I just, for me, I have this real powerful nostalgia of, and comfort vibes of just like settling in with a Zelda game just after the Thanksgiving holiday. You're still sort of sleeping off the turkey vibes, just setting up a little blanket fort and just fucking going ham on Zelda with a bucket of chicken nuggets and some apple cinnamon dipping sauce. I will note, I, as an adult, have, because you cannot most years get the apple cinnamon dipping sauce, although occasionally you can, keep an eye out. I have actually done this with chicken nuggets and apple cinnamon applesauce, which is not quite as good, but does, for me, come close enough that it evokes like the comfy comfort feels that we are talking about in this discussion. And this is something I do every year. I've revisited, at this point, most of the mainline 3D games. The only one I hadn't revisited up until about a couple of years ago was Twilight Princess. But now that I have finally properly revisited and done Twilight Princess, and I've even come around to liking Twilight Princess, I think I'm gonna do Majora's Mask this year.
Awesome.
Yeah, I haven't replayed. I did replay Majora's Mask about 10 years after it came out, but now that replay itself was quite some time ago.
Almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, right? So it's time. It's time. And as far as the listener recommendation, on one hand, I always recommend playing more Zelda. I do think most of these games are really well designed. I used to have a little bit of an axe to bear as far as like feeling like they were too formulaic, but with the advent of the open air series, now going back to the more formulaic iterations is more fun to me because I do have the open world option should I want it. And I often do avail myself. I replay the open air games. I pop into those worlds just to mess around pretty frequently. Like I've played through those. I have not replayed either of those games on Switch 2, but I've popped into both of those game worlds quite a few times already since the Switch 2 released, and likely will continue to do so. So I always recommend playing more Zelda. I also recommend chicken nuggets with the apple cinnamon dipping sauce when they have it, and maybe just try some apple cinnamon applesauce with your nuggets next time, and some Zelda in a blanket fort. Slaggy, what about you?
Before I talk about mine, which actually is very related, have you ever tried apple butter as a
I've tried it before. I have not tried it with chicken nuggets. I'll make a note.
Yeah, because I was thinking that might be the right consistency for like a dip. I have never done the apple cinnamon dip, but you know, there's not quite in food a chemistry like apple and cinnamon. So you know, for me,
just like, too good.
Underrated. For me, most of the games I'm going to be talking about are kind of like retro games. I don't know if it's because I'm a fucking Libra party. Like this time of year, I kind of get nostalgic for the past. Maybe because it's like, you know, when my birthday is. So like with the passage of time, I'm looking back. I don't know. I also just really like the fall. There's something that revisiting these games gives me a sense of comfort. I, you know, love when it's like kind of that like hazy fall weather. You know, just get really cozy with a game that a game world or a game series or whatever that is just comfortable and just like on a comfortable sweater, right? And so the first one I want to talk about kind of builds on what you were saying is I definitely agree that Zelda is great. For me, the one that really, really stands out to me during the fall is Zelda 1. Something about it just hits the right vibe. Like,
there are all about of those trees that are like brown and dying, and it, no, exactly. I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah. Like going into the first level one dungeon into a, like an old dead tree, or going into a tree and being like, let's play money making game, right? Like, but even just like wandering, something about wandering around Hyrule, like compared to Hyrule these days, it's very sparse and kind of, you know, just it really gives me that sense of kind of being in kind of a desolate place almost. And for whatever reason, that really hits the spot in fall. And you know, it has the graveyard, which is spooky. It's just something about Hyrule, especially that very first iteration. Even though there's nothing inherently fall themed about it, it's just very comforting. I would like to give an honorable mention to A Link to the Past, which also gives similar vibes. I mean, all the Zelda games are great, right? Except those CDI ones. But, you know, for me specifically, I think something about, like, I can go and find all the heart containers. And, like, even though I don't really think there's any secrets that I haven't discovered yet, just, again, like, the same way that you might put on a familiar movies during the kind of festive seasons, right? Like, it's the same for me for games like the original Legend of Zelda. So, yeah, I definitely feel that it is time. It's been a couple years since I've had the opportunity to do a autumn playthrough. So, I think it's long overdue.
Girl, I'm obviously putting the cart before the horse, but maybe we should do an online Zelda playthrough and stream it.
That could be a thing.
Indeed. Did you have anything else to say about Zelda?
No, but in the cart that you're putting ahead, are there apples in it that you're going to use to make apple cinnamon dipping sauce?
I was planning to use it to make apple butter.
Excellent.
The next game that I revisit is actually kind of a cheat, because I revisit it pretty regularly during non-autumnal time as well. But this is Demon's Crest. Demon's Crest, of course, is an SNES classic. Of course, likewise to what Sidekick was just saying, or likewise to what Slaggy McWaggy was just saying, I also am largely going retro with my picks. Even the game I picked that was meant to be a modern game, as I was writing my notes, I realized, in fact, I was still doing a retro game just because of how the passage of time works, you know? But anyway, obviously, you know, I visit this game pretty frequently. I've noted that. The thing is, the spooky aesthetic and gothic vibes make it a really good, like, early fall mood setter for, like, you know, Halloween and stuff, especially sort of alongside, like, the Castlevania series. I am saying that I basically play this game multiple times a year still some years, but yes, that is simply true.
It's like your favorite game. Like,
yeah, right?
You can do that.
You know, it's to the point, and I just tested this out a couple months ago. I can get through the game on a single life if I want to, including the final secret boss, which is kind of a big deal. When I'm just playing for fun, I kind of like to sack lives in order to, like, do the water level early and, like, sequence break, you know? But it was actually very edifying to just, like, do a fast run of the game and not die at all just a couple months ago. I will put that feather in my cap, thank you very much, because it's actually generally pretty much known as, like, a challenging and hard game, especially for newcomers to get into. The thing is, for me, it's perfect Halloween fare. It has really creepy vibes, beautiful artwork, really lovely soundtrack, and it's super accessible on NSO for a subscription that most of our listeners probably already have. So in that context, despite being a pretty challenging game that, you know, is likely not going to be a perfect fit for everyone like it is for me, I do think it's an easy recommendation for checking out in the modern era. Have you played Demon's Crest? Do you have any thoughts on that one?
I never actually played it, but I've watched you play it so many times that I feel like I know it well, and I enjoy it that way. Like, I kind of wish that I had a big plate of gnocchi right now and was watching you play Demon's Crest.
Oh, dude, that would be so cool. Anyway, what do you have next for me?
Yeah, so the next one I want to talk about is the Super Mario Brothers series, specifically Mario 2. Like, they're all great to play those, 2D Marios from the NES, SNES era. But for me, Mario 2 was one that I just, for whatever reason, always liked to play kind of during that autumnal time. I just have this very specific memory of, even though the soundtrack to Super Mario Brothers 2, obviously I'm talking about Doki Doki Panic. If you're a listener of the show, you know that I have a soft spot for this game. So despite the fact that that soundtrack is a total banger, I remember like putting on like Beatles CDs on like at the time, which felt like a big stereo system, which probably was pretty modest in by modern standards, but so, like, you know, similar to Zelda, even arguably less so, there's not really anything inherently fall-themed, but it's just, again, that kind of, that vibe of, like, the weather was, you know, not great, and this was pre-internet, so, like, couldn't go out and play, so, you know, more time gaming. I think that was kind of honestly a big part of what kind of drove the, you know, fall and winter gaming vibes of my youth. And I'd also really like to give an honorable mention to Super Mario Brothers 3 and Super Mario World. Mario World might honestly be the most kind of fall vibes one. Like, you got the Forest of Illusion is very, like, ooh, and just, like, the ghost houses in general, right? Like,
well, and in World, if you do the extra world and then hit the super secret switch at the end of it, and it changes the whole world state, it becomes kind of even more autumnal vibes from my perspective. Like, I can't explain why I think giving all of the Koopa Troopas those weird mask face things makes it more autumnal.
They're going trick-or-treating.
Oh my god, that does explain why I feel that way. Oh god.
And, you know, I've never done, like, a 100% of world ever, so, like, I feel like...
If you want to do a 100% of world, and you might need a second player to help you with some of those extra worlds, that might be a good one for us to stream as a two-player clear.
Yeah, as long as the netcode on Switch Online is gotten a little better.
Oh shoot! Right. Well, that's a whole ass thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, but that I totally forgot that. Even if the netcode's kind of bad, like, that would be fun. That would be fun to do that, because I forgot you can do that. Not yeah. really so much with Zelda, but with Super Mario World, that would be cool. Hmm.
Indeed.
What's your next one?
The next one for me is one I already previously referenced, but it is the Castlevania series. It's obviously fairly obvious, but for me, Halloween, changing of the clocks time is just kind of always the right time to, like, do vampire slaying. Obviously, in recent years, the various Konami collections have made this very easy. But for me, it actually dates back to, like, the GBA and into the DS era. I remember my first years as a working stiff and my first years commuting and carrying my GBA and then my DS everywhere I went, as, you know, the days would grow short and the nights long. They were just kind of like my constant companions on, like, the BART train every day. And so there's just something for me that's, like, big nostalgia in revisiting these games since I know them so well. But I actually still think they're really solid games, particularly the GBA and DS era of games. And again, which are super easy to access these days via the various modern Konami collections of them.
Yeah.
If you're interested in Metroidvania gameplay, you think this kind of 2D spooky aesthetic, frightful aesthetic is your vibe, I think it's a no-brainer to check out the Castlevania series. They're not autumnal in terms of, like, things I love about fall, but they are autumnal in terms of being literally Halloween as shit.
Absolutely. Rondo of Blood is... probably on my radar. Is there an easy way to play Rondo of Blood these days? Because I mentioned that, like, literally last time. I'll ask you more about that after, so that I can go on to my next one, which
it is included in the Castlevania Requiem collection that is available on the PS4 and so playable on PS5.
Excellent. Gonna download that later. God, I don't have enough time to play everything I want to play, but I will definitely be making some time somehow to carve out some time for the Sonic series. These are similar to kind of what you said I'm specifically thinking about Sonic and Knuckles. A lot of those Sonic games came out in the fall. Obviously, Sonic 3 came out on Hedgehog Day 1994, but Sonic and Knuckles is kind of the one that I am specifically thinking of. That one came out in October of 1994. You know, it was the second half of Sonic 3, basically. Like, right, you know, usually I will cite Sonic 3 and Knuckles kind of as the complete version as one of my top games of all time. But for me, like, just thinking of Sonic and Knuckles as its own game, like, without the lock-on, like, just zoning into Mushroom Hill Zone, like, completely sets the autumnal vibes.
I will say, the moment you had said Sonic and Knuckles, I was like, oh shit, that giant mushroom forest is autumnal as shit.
Right? Like, I would love to hang out in Mushroom Hill Zone. So, like, that being said, like, I would recommend, like, and, you know, there's different ways that the different collections over the years have handled the lock-on technology and stuff. Like, obviously, I'm always going to say that Sonic 3 with the lock-on technology is the way to go. But I also really like Sonic 2 being able to play as my boy Knuckles. I fucking love Knuckles. I have been a Knuckles fan since 1994, like, so we're going on 30 years, over 30 years now of Knuckle fandom. I really feel like for the autumnal vibes, being able to hang out in Mushroom Hill, obviously, but, like, honestly, Sonic 2 is great. Sonic 1's cute. Sonic 1's good. It was important, but Sonic 2, Sonic 3, plus Knuckles, like, that's really peak for me. You know, Sonic CD also, you know, definitely a great game as well. But for me, like, if I want to go have that autumnal vibe, it's going to be in Mushroom Hill Zone. Hanging out as Knuckles, my boy. Link, my boy.
Nice. Then the next one I want to do is another throwback. And this is the Pokemon series. It's funny, but, you know, it's like, obviously, I play Pokemon games every fall. Most people do, because the series has taken on a regular release cadence of being an annualized Q4 series. But for me, the sort of remarkable thing about this is when the annualized release is a spinoff, and this year is actually a great example of that with the upcoming Legends Z to A.
Yes.
I typically still find myself filling in the release calendar by revisiting older titles, or sometimes even the newer ones, but also doing the DLC this time, which is in fact how I ended up playing the Pokemon Violet DLC, I think last year it was, because by the time the Pokemon Violet DLC originally released, I was kind of disconnected from the game. I've played so many of these games, but I find a real, like, gentle comfort in the regular mechanics and, like, the aesthetic trappings of the series. Just, like, the whole, like, gameplay loop of, you know, you're capturing, you're grinding, you're doing a gym challenge, you're moving on. It's very comforting for me, and it always ends up for me setting the right tone in, like, the transition for me. And again, it probably ties into when I originally played it, but it, like, for me, it always feels like the transition game that I start a little before Halloween, and then I wrap up as we're heading into Christmas, so, like, through that November period. And basically, after I finish Z to A Legends, which is coming out next week, crazy enough, I am gobsmacked by the passage of time. But when I'm done with that, so frankly, probably November, right in line with my normal, I think this year I plan on going back to Shining Pearl and playing through that from the beginning. And, inspired by a recent previous episode where we had both noted that did not completes on that one upon its initial release. So I think for me, it's time to go back and clean that one up. All of that having been said, I think Pokemon is a very easy recommendation. It's comfort gaming comfort food. And that to me is exactly what I'm looking for when I'm looking for, like, what can I bundle up in a blanket? What can I sit in front of the TV and veg out and, you know, just game away for, you know, 5 hours when I happen to have 5 free hours, because, you know, the whole world is cold as hell and dark as heck after 5 p.m. those nights. So Pokemon is a very easy recommendation, but I really want to note, because one of the vibes here is like, you don't always have to be playing the newest game in a series. If you don't plan on picking up Zeta A next week, but you have caught the Pokerus hearing us talk about it over the last few episodes, like I kind of have, why not revisit an older game? I think it's a great series for it and time. What about you, Psyche?
Yeah, so I wanted to build on what you said, because the Pokemon series definitely is one that I really love for the similar reasons. One that unfortunately is a little harder to play in the modern era, just because we have not had a modern re-release of it, and why I am desperately waiting for a Let's Go Snubbull and Let's Go Meryl. This is, of course, Pokemon Gold, Silver, and Crystal. That is the one that I think has the ultimate autumnal vibes. You know, it came out in October of 2000. I've talked about how much I love Gold, Silver, Crystal, and that I like imported Crystal, because back in the day, like, I didn't even know that it was a guaranteed port over here. Not port, but localization, rather. And so,
yeah, a lot of us didn't think it would come out back in the day. I mean, obviously now in retrospect, it seems silly, but honestly, for a lot of series, it used to be like that. We'd always have to hope we'd get any iteration.
Right, right. So I have really, really strong core memories of when Crystal came out the following fall in, or actually, I think Crystal came out over the summer, but I remember playing it in the fall, like rain pouring outside. The Strokes, Is This It? Had just come out. And so I remember like listening to that on repeat, despite the fact, again, complete 10 out of 10 soundtrack for Gold, Silver, Crystal. Like, just definitely gave me the autumn vibes. Sprout Tower is very autumnal to me. And then you have like the ruins of Alf with all the unknown. Azalea Town, where you can get the apricorns and stuff, is kind of like a, you know, almost like a Studio Ghibli kind of village almost. You could do bug catching in the national park. And then definitely there's Ecruteak City, which had Cody and the ghost type gym. There's like straight up like red and golden and brown leaf trees and stuff. Like Johto is just a great place to hang out in the fall.
Oh, yeah. Game Boy Color, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, of course, then you have Kanto, which like, I it's criminal that there's no great way aside from I might have to pull out my 3DS for the first time in many, many years if I want to play this. But actually, it's funny that you mentioned Shining Pearl, because I've been thinking about, despite what I stated about Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, you know, kind of not really hitting the mark in the way something like Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee did. For this purpose of kind of revisiting that retro vibe, I think actually this would be the right time for that. And if you're doing
I'm excited to replay. Please continue though.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying, if you're doing a Shining Pearl playthrough, I should do a Brilliant Diamond and I'll trade you the exclusives.
Yeah, that might be fun. I would probably see if I could use Pokebank for it at this point, but I mean, frankly, working with you to get them would not be a problem and could be additive. So yeah, let's talk about that off air.
Yeah, yeah. So what you got next?
I want to wrap this up. My last main point, now, I do have a couple honorable mentions, but I'll probably fly through those just due to how long in the tooth we're getting. But yep, my last main mention goes to the Bayonetta series. So far, this has actually really been two, which I've replayed the last few years as a Christmas game.
The Die Hard of Bayonetta's?
Yes, it literally is. The thing is, Bayonetta 1 is obviously a wonderful Halloween game. Bayonetta 3 is also a wonderful Halloween game. Bayonetta 2 is a Christmas game. And as a result, you know, I've been revisiting Bayonetta 1 and 2 for the last probably decade, actually. And it's typically been two for Christmas. It is sometimes one for Halloween. The thing that is kind of changing this year is that I think I'm planning on revisiting Bayonetta 3 this year. The thing is, I had not replayed it since its original release on Switch a couple of years ago. I really enjoyed its original form. I had a great time with the game, but the thing is, it ran really poorly on the original Switch. Like really poorly, lots of frame drops in a genre that is notably negatively impacted by frame drops. So That having been said, I've seen it in a lot of Switch 2 tests keep supposedly a pretty locked frame rate. So I think it's time for me to revisit it and see if maybe I get even more of a kick out of it now. I think it might well be this fright season that I revisit this one.
Nice.
I also thought it was interesting. You know, most of these games that I've mentioned, I get the fall vibes and comfort from, you know, largely the nostalgia. Whereas in this case, I have typically revisited Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 as seasonal games specific to like, oh, time for creepy games, Bayonetta, oh, time for Christmas, Bayonetta 2. That having been said, Bayonetta, our girl, has been kicking ass for more than 15 years. So she kind of, this also is kind of nostalgia now. That having been said, if the gameplay of these types of games suits you, Bayonetta 1 and 2 are wonderful games to revisit in the fall. I don't feel fully comfortable co-signing 3 as a fall revisitation yet, but maybe I'll have an update for you on that in a few weeks.
Excellent.
Slaggy, do you have any thoughts on Bayonetta? Otherwise, what are your last big game? What is your
I have not done a Bayonetta replay in such a long time. So I should rectify that. I don't know if it'll be this fall, but you know, maybe I'll just play Bayonetta 2 for Christmas, or I don't know. I will have to see. But something that I will make sure to do this fall, because it's super easy, even if it's just to drop in and literally vibe, that's in Animal Crossing, specifically New Horizons. But I think all of the Animal Crossing games, one of the things that they've been able to do really well, even though other games like, you know, Stardew Valley, etc., Story of Seasons literally has it in the title, right? Like, the thing about the real-time calendar in Animal Crossing really helps that, like, fall is coming feeling. And, like, I live in an area where there are some trees that have, you know, dead leaves in the dirty ground, etc. But I, you know, being on my island in New Horizons and seeing the autumnal leaves, the acorns and pine cones being able to be collected, you shake them off the trees and like you can catch fall leaves with a net. Like it's something that I think in this case I think the strong comfort there was that, you know, this came out during the COVID lockdown, and so it came out, you know, of course in the spring, like literally a few days before the lockdown happened, and you know, this change from spring to summer in Animal Crossing isn't like super visually impactful. So getting to the fall when we'd literally been locked away for months, you know, inside our houses, and being able to explore this, you know, little fall wonderland of your own making, decorating with like an acorn arch, just was such a comfort. And even though I do not play Animal Crossing New Horizons like frequently, I will hop back on like every couple months just to kind of spend even if it's about like 20 minutes there, just walking around my island. Like I honestly feel like, despite the fact that I've not really touched the game meaningfully in the really long time, I could see myself like, you know, actually like kind of decorating my kind of town square plaza area. And that's something that I haven't done in a long time, just for the cozy comfort vibes of it all.
Damn, you're making me want to play Animal Crossing.
Do it. I'll come and I'll make you some like acorn arches and stuff.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
All right. Well, we are long in the tooth, as you said. So what are your honorable mentions?
All right. Well, so my honorable mentions for autumnal gaming actually all hinge around the same basic concept, right? It's like, so for me, it's like the Nintendo Online universe of games, as I describe them. So like Animal Crossing, Mario Kart, Clubhouse games, etc. Basically, the theory for me goes that as we get to autumn, suddenly a lot of my friends and mutuals start having a lot more free time. People who maybe don't spend every night gaming the way that, you know, my husband and I and mostly you tend to do, you know, they do all start gaming every night. And as a result, we end up being able to link up and play these games a lot more often. And so for me, like, you're talking about Animal Crossing, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess it's time for my annual dipping back into Animal Crossing. But, you know, other people are going to be starting to do that too. Same with, you know, I'm pretty sure that we're going to start seeing Mario Kart parties start popping up. Mario Party parties start popping up. So that's actually one of the things I really love about fall is, likewise, you know, Fortnite. I play every year, but I really notice that every year as we hit Fortnite Mares and then on through Winterfest, my mutuals in that game are online more and more at the same time as me, which obviously ends up leading to an increased playtime together and having more fun together. And then the last one that game that really comes to mind for me that I end up playing, but only during the fall, but a lot every year, is Jackbox. All through the year, I sort of talk about how I want to plan Jackbox nights, but for various reasons, you know, people just can't all seem to make the same night work until the fall. And then suddenly we can coalesce these nights every 3 weeks. And I like Jackbox, actually. I think it's a really great way to connect and stay vibing with your gamer friends, as well as, for my social circle at least, most of the quote-unquote non-gamer friends. And, you know, there's a new iteration coming out later this month, but I just want to note, like, the joy of these games comes from the crowd, not the software, so you could still just play the old games and have just as much fun, I imagine. What about you, Psyche? I know for me, like I said, it all sort of hinges upon the increased availability of others for social gaming. What are your honorable mentions for fall?
Yeah, I just have to say I love your choices, and I can't wait to partake in some of those. I definitely agree with the Mario parties, Mario Karts. Specifically, I feel like even though World is the new hotness, going and playing some Mario Kart 8 Deluxe might be fun because I would love to go like race around Maple Tree Wave, which is very autumnal. Twisted Mansion is another great one for the Halloween vibes. I hadn't even thought of Mario Party until you said that, but Mario Party Superstars, which is on the Switch, has the what was it called? The one from Mario Party 2, Horror Land, which is the Haunted Forest. And then Jamboree has one that is like a little forest as well. It's, you know, not a throwback one. The Mega Wigglers Tree Party, which isn't like super autumnal, but still, you know, foresty vibes are always good. So like that would be a lot of fun to do. But Superstars I haven't loaded up. I feel like doing some rounds of Horror Land would be super, super cool. And there was also Woody Woods from Mario Party 3. I pulled up a list there. Yeah, so that would really be the good one for autumn, I think. The other thing I wanted to talk about is that it's always fun in like MMOs and stuff to have Halloween or fall events. I don't play World of Warcraft or Destiny 2 currently, but, you know, I had fond memories of the Headless Horseman fight in WoW and trying to get the mount. I never did get that damn mount. There was a really cool... one year they had some really cool stuff with the Festival of the Lost in Destiny 2. I understand that that's a annual thing, but I really got into it one year. But obviously for me... Final Fantasy 14, I'm obviously playing constantly. I'm pretty comfortable at this point saying it's probably my favorite game, just because I'm always playing it. You mentioned All Saints Wake is coming soon, and I never ever want to miss that. I'm sorry, every time All Saints come up, I have to make that joke, but I love being able to get the little mounts or outfits or emotes. They kind of alternate through the years what you get. They have the amphitheater and Gridania's all decorated, and I love that little haunted house area that they added a couple years ago, and they seem to have brought that back. It's like a little phased area that you can go and explore.
But I'm also so excited to take screenshots in that new area with my new setup. I'm really excited.
Yes, let's do it. Let's get our best glam. Like, something that I haven't done as much in the past is, like, get a Halloween glamour. But I feel like I really just want to get in those fall vibes this year.
Oh, girl, you got to. I do. I actually do seasonal glams for Halloween and Christmas every year, and I highly recommend it. It's really fun to have a little costume.
Yeah, I mean, the season. I guess technically I did it last year, but it was that, you know, the like demon horns and the tie and stuff, so it wasn't really like my usual like pumpkin spooky ooky glamour or whatever. Something else that's fun to do is during my brief tenure as a streamer, I went and did a Halloween stream. I think it was Halloween night, and went and looked at haunted houses that people had decorated. And
oh, that's hecka cute.
Also did a run of Hawkeye Manor, which is their haunted mansion. So I feel like that is a thing to do. I feel like we haven't really had a good fall-themed expansion yet. This winter, I think I'm going to do New Game Plus of Heavensward, because that is winter AF. But I don't think we have one for the fall yet, so that's not here nor now.
Excellent. All right. Well, then, that brings us to the end. This is a little bit of a tricky question, simply because you can't really know what's going to become your comfort game, right? But to wrap this up, I'd like to ask, what Autumnal Vibes games, if any, are you anticipating? And are there any modern games that you're playing or have played recently that you could see yourself slipping into Autumnal revisitations of?
That's a great question. I think I'm really excited for Legends ZA. I could see that being kind of part of the Autumnal revisitation. Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. I think that one, even though it's like it's literally brand new, I feel like Blue Prince would be a good one to visit during the fall. And you know, one that I didn't mention, and I guess it's not really retro yet. I'm like, it's not retro yet. Like, it was a PS4 game. What Remains of Edith Finch. I did a replay not during the fall, but I feel like that anything with exploring a house would probably be feel like very good.
It's so funny because that's exactly when you said blueprints. That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, it's perfect to like do like exploring the corridors while like you're also having like the shadows grow long as the sun sets early. It's just like vibes aesthetic on point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I have revisited What Remains of Edith Finch, within recent years, but I feel like that would be a good kind of annual fall one, especially because that's not too long of a play. You could get a nice cloudy weekend. Just a day. I did it when I was streaming, like, you know, 3 or 4 hours. So yeah, I think those are a couple. I hope for some more in the future.
Excellent. All right, well, I'm not going to belabor the point because we're quite well long in the tooth already, so let's start winding down by talking about what is up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, so actually, before you get started, just to kind of streamline things here, probably no surprise to you because I've been playing some of them and talking to you about them, and but all of mine are kind of crosstalk this week, so I will pop in after you have said your piece about the games that I have also been playing to keep things moving.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I know that I've described this week as a gaming light week for me, but also I play like 7 games, so I'm just like, look at my life, look at my choices.
Jealous.
Super Robot Wars Y continues to go. I've done acts 5 and 6. I feel like I surely must be reaching the end of the story now. I had one chapter that I truly thought must be the conclusion, and then surely it wasn't.
Oh.
I'm now past the 90 hour point.
Wow.
I will say the quality of writing is very high. The story is definitely the best it's ever been in any of these games that I've played, and I've been playing them regularly since, you know, the PS1 era.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think that's a huge positive. The best narrative since the PS1 era is a major positive. The negative is that I haven't encountered any new like series or like new units to recruit outside of a small handful of a couple of secret units I was able to recruit. Basically, the game was very front-loaded with its big, exciting things, and now it's been an additional, like, 50 hours with very little new or exciting to, like, keep me excited. So I'm still enjoying the game, I'm still playing through it, but, like, there is a certain degree of, like, thank God this is the best-written game in the series, because it's a little bit of a trudge to have so many maps like this.
Wow.
Complaining about content feels weird, but again, you know, brevity can be the soul of wit. I think it ends up playing out in many different layers in a lot of different ways. It feels, yeah, it feels real freaking to be saying that when we're at hour like three of recording. It feels hypocritical to say, but it doesn't make it less true.
No, I feel that. I feel that.
Okay, Slacky, well, why don't you do one for me?
Sure. Well, I'll lead you into this crosstalk then. So I know that we have both been playing, although we haven't had the chance to interact in-game yet, Blue Protocol Star Resonance, which is the new rebirth of the Blue Protocol MMO. So I'm just going to basically kind of read off my notes here to keep things moving. So this game's been out literally since, what, Thursday? So it's very new. For me, day one, I was just like, oh, anime vibes. Like, you know, it's not obviously the only game with an anime cel-shaded art style, but super cool. Made a Bishonen beautiful boy player. And the day one, I was kind of a little overwhelmed with, like, all the different currencies, even though, like, you could say the same thing about something like Final Fantasy XIV, and just, like, all the different things to do and all the different gameplay systems were kind of like, whoa, they kind of packed a lot in here. But it was still fun. And then over the past few days, I've been settling into a groove more. I really got into a lot of the side quests. You know, the story quests seem interesting, but, like, I did a side quest that was, like, exploring the sewers. I don't know if you've done that one yet. And there's like a whole underworld, and I like was really getting into it. So my pros for the game is that it's really fun to play with a controller. I'm enjoying kind of the flavor of the class that I'm playing, which is beat performer. It's basically kind of like a bard, but they use a guitar, and you can like do buffs and heals and fire attacks. I really, really enjoy the parkour light elements. Like you get triple jumps. You can kinda like you start with a jump and you can unlock double jump and triple jump and all that stuff. So I've been able to get to like high spots that I would not easily be able to do in something like Final Fantasy XIV. It almost evokes like Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom vibes. My overall cons, a little one is just that I feel like the controller controls are maybe not quite as responsive or customizable as they are with, you know, something like Final Fantasy XIV, which I play exclusively with controller. Like sometimes I just feel like my skills aren't activating when I press them. That could just be me. I need to get good or whatever. I have noticed a few localization errors and some typos. A little irksome is that, like, sometimes my character will sound like, ah, and then sometimes they'll be like, ha! Ah! So, like, can we get some, maybe some more voice options? The big one is that the microtransactions are pretty egregious. Not that I can judge. I paid for some expensive stuff on Final Fantasy XIV. But there are some pay-to-win concerns. I'm not going to belabor the point here for the sake of time. These items that you can get through exchanging other currencies that you buy for in-game currency, like you can get that in-game currency in-game, but it's kind of like less pay to win and more pay to min-max yourself sooner and be like super ultimate. Like I just think these are better when microtransactions, regardless of the cost, are cosmetic only. So overall, I'm kind of taking the perspective that it's a free-to-play, it's basically a MOBA game, right? It's not going to be the same as a Final Fantasy XIV experience. Not sure how much staying power it will have, but I'm trying to think of it less as an MMO that I'm playing like constantly, like 14, and that once I hit the level cap and there's kind of a content drought, unlike 14 where I will, you know, always be doing one thing or another in that game, that this is something that I could come back and check out when there's new stuff. So we will see. And what about you with Blue Protocol?
Yeah, it's been interesting because the game has been facing review bombs for right. A lot of the critiques that you've noted. And, you know, you've noted them because, as I would agree, they're not really inaccurate, right? The reality is this is the revived version of a dead MMO that, for the most part, died before it even released in most regions. You know, and the revival involved, in some ways, shaping the game more to be like a mobile game, more like a Genshin Impact type, in order right. to cut some production quarters. For me, I personally find what's on offer very agreeable in a broad sense, because I really like, in specific, the action combat, which I think sings with the controller. I don't really think you could do optimal play in Final Fantasy with a controller. Like, I just don't see how that happens, but I can easily see how it happens in Blue Protocol. And I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm saying I don't see how I could do that. Or I should say, I meant to say, I don't see how I could do that.
I'm like, well, I do it just fine. Sorry. Please continue.
But the thing is, right, like the microtransactions, as you say, though, they are egregiously priced. And so the fact that so many review bombs have centered on that is appropriate. You know, there is a lack of content to a certain degree. They're doing this controversial thing, I think you mentioned, about how they're time gating the content. And it's fine that they're doing that. It has its pluses, it has its minuses. My husband and I, on day one, we hit our quest cap within about 90 minutes of playing. So that's, you know, kind of a negative. But the flip is, for me, likewise, you know, I don't see that I could ever really replace Final Fantasy with this for my MMO time, like full time. But I do easily see myself putting 30 to 60 minutes a day into it and playing it as, you know, an extra side game every day. And to that degree, I'm having a blast with it. I haven't really partaken in the microtransactions, but to buy their little season pass, as I typically do with free-to-play games mm-hmm. that I end up having a good time with, you know, give them some money for their efforts. But otherwise, you know, I'm just have avoided that. I'm still enjoying, you know, grouping, as you had mentioned, you haven't done any party play yet. It's very easy to group up and form a party. It's very easy to do the little dungeons together. It's honestly even super easy to find one another and post together for pictures. So I honestly have no real complaints. Yeah.
Yeah. I meant more specifically with you because I want to play with you.
Excellent. Well, yeah. And I guess I was noting the game actually makes it very easy. I had been initially worried, but once I came to understand how it works, it's super straightforward.
Excellent.
With all that having been said, though, I'd like to move on to my next game. That is Fortnite Festival, or well, I should say Fortnite generally, although Festival does play a large part in it. Specifically, so I did actually basically all of the game modes over the last 2 weeks. Battle Royale started with the K-pop Demon Hunters week before transitioning into Fortnitemares. During K-pop Demon Hunters week, I had been really sad to see the Megazord cinematics and gameplay go, particularly that sense of scale transitioning. Really incredible asymmetric gameplay that I hope someone at Toei was paying attention. I really need to underline how well that translated the tokusatsu fantasy. That having been said, some of the specific gameplay touches they did with K-pop Demon Hunters were just a lot of fun. Stuff like how the capture point mechanics were updated so they would speed up while you were doing your dance emotes felt really fitting to the theme and made it more engaging than just sitting on a capture point, because you're emoting, you're making noise, you're very visible and defenseless, but you're also capturing this capture point so fast. So it's just really cool gameplay tension, which I liked. Fortnitemares this season has been really fun. It's always a blast to have access to that high-powered weaponry, stuff like the chainsaw that is also just a killer traversal tool, no pun intended. They added Ghostface Killer as a guest character or whatever, and right now there are phone booths that you go into and you get like a cell phone as ghost, and then you like call them. It's like a Ghostface Killer themed cell phone. It like sends out a ping that tags any enemies that are near you, and you can also use it as like a knife to stab them for major damage. It's just really fun. Fortnitemares is always a hella good time.
Nice.
Let's see, for K-pop Demon Hunters, they also introduced the popular Fortnitemares mode Demon Rush. Well, normally it's Horde Rush. This is still really great. The K-pop Demon Hunters theming is still really fun. Mostly, I want to note, this year's progression feels really good, and their use of the augment mechanics is really well done. Blitz, unfortunately, K-pop Demon Hunters was a high-powered week, and so I had a blast. But unfortunately, during Fortnitemares, this is sort of the quote-unquote vanilla mode right now compared to regular Battle Royale. And even Reload right now is Fort Nightmares themed and very high-powered weaponry. So Blitz right now is like the vanilla, like sort of current weapons are just guns getting super sweaty. It's just kind of unfavorable to my tastes personally right now. But like 3 out of 4 isn't bad, right? The new festival season has been really good also. I really appreciate the increased number of songs on the Battle Pass. And having Doja Cat as the current Fort Nightmares focus makes it really easy to not get caught up in the fact that Festival didn't have a seasonal icon this go around. I'm really hoping that the rumors are true that behind the scenes they're nearing a bunch of new features for Festival. Fingers crossed. Slaggy, what about you? I know you have some Fortnite stuff.
Yeah, I've played a little bit of Festival, but not as much Fortnite as I probably should. I've missed out on a lot of the different Fortnite stuff because I, more than Fortnite, was playing Final Fantasy XIV. That being said, I have not done a lot of the new content. Ran into some very minor health stuff earlier this week, like nothing of concern at all, but just kind of that impacted my gaming time a little. So the new patch 7.35 that came out, I've not really had a chance to touch until just this weekend. One thing I will say is that the muscle memory this weekend after playing Blue Protocol Star Resonance, I'm like, oh wait, that's not the jump button on Final Fantasy. So I did unlock the new Allied Society quests, which are this patch. It is dailies for the crafters. Even though all my crafters are already at max level, these are oftentimes a great way to level your crafting jobs. I'm really just doing it because they always have fun rewards like mounts and minions and stuff. And so I just always, and I'm kind of getting to be a completionist in that game. So that is something that seems like they always tell like kind of little cute side stories that tie into like zones and, you know, groups of people that you've come across. I did grab the Monster Hunter Guardian Arkveld quest to like start that chain, like the breadcrumb for it, but I have not like unlocked the trial yet. Definitely looking forward to that. I've not been spoiled about anything about it, so I can't wait to experience it. I kind of want to go in without any spoilers. I did unlock the new Deep Dungeon very late last night before I was like falling asleep in my armchair. I have not gone in yet, largely because I just unlocked it last night and I've been getting ready for the show and now recording, but hopefully we can do it soon because I've heard it's like the best Deep Dungeon so far. The people in my online Final Fantasy XIV circles really like it. So I kind of imagine that after this kind of initial rush of Blue Protocol, that I will be kind of settling into my more regular cadence of 14, especially with All Saints Wake. All right, what you got for us?
It was actually a really quiet week for me in Final Fantasy. Because I indulged in a new PC setup, I haven't really done the new content. I was getting my PC set up and getting my online settings crossed over involved getting my old PC reconnected and logging in and like saving my settings to server side, etc. I've done it all now. I'm all ready to go, but it just ended up taking a couple more steps than I was anticipating because it had been so long since I built an outright new box rather than upgraded an old box. Like we're talking close, like decades here. I just hadn't been anticipating how many steps it was going to take to get my new box set up. In wonderful other news, though, I can play Marvel Rivals again. And to that end, I should note Blade is great. Angela is great. Daredevil's visual mechanic is so freaking cool. Have you seen this, Slaggy?
I haven't. I kind of have dropped off of Rivals, not in a like can't stand it way, but I've not played in a long time, so
well,
I should pop in.
Are you familiar conceptually with the fact that Daredevil is blind but sees through a sonar?
Yeah, of course.
So in game, that's manifest that you have like a. There's like a visual effect outside of a very limited range away from you, and you have like no good visual sense there, but rapidly, like all of the enemies within a radius of you are also pinging, even if there are walls between you and them. So it's like emulating his radar sense in a way that gives him like way super advanced enemy tracking for the cost of like visual awareness of the environment. It's incredible.
Oh, that's wild. Sounds like, yeah, it could be kind of broken.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there are team comps that, like, if you had a Daredevil doing your shot calling, I imagine you could probably wreck house, absolutely. And in fact, the ability works to see through, like, Invisible Woman invisibilities and stuff, as it should, frankly. Wow. I think it's a really cool ability. I can't believe they went so far with it, but I think it ends up really feeling good. I will say about the game generally, I really, especially now that they have all these extra characters, like, role balance feels really messed up. Queuing with randoms, it felt like one out of every five matches people queued into a workable team, and otherwise people just played who they wanted to play and fucked off, and that wasn't great. But in general, the core of the game remains really great and really strong. I just, design wise, they have a couple of things I think they need to address, but I hope they do, because I still think it's a tremendous game. I think it's really neat.
Excellent. Yeah, I should pop into it.
Yeah, that would be great. And then what about you, Slaggy? I think you had one more, and then I'll build off that.
Yeah, because I noticed that you've been playing it. I played the demo of Sonic Racing Cross Worlds. I was kind of expecting it to play like Mario Kart. I've obviously not been following it super, super closely besides what we've talked about here on the show. I remember Sonic Racing Transformed basically feeling like a kart game, you know, kind of like almost like a Diddy Kong Racing with the different vehicles, which Mario Kart kind of cribbed, honestly. But honestly, it's a little more like the Fast and the Furriest Tokyo Drift. Which I think is great to differentiate it from Mario Kart. But for me, it didn't click, and that's okay. So I will not be probably picking this up. I might give the demo another chance and see if it can click for me. But I don't suspect that it will. But I know that you have enjoyed it.
Yeah. You know, I honestly, for my tastes, I actually think this is a better fit than Mario Kart World. But it's, you know, it's the thing I like about it is that the racing is very tight. The controls are very focused. It didn't surprise me when I did a little bit more digging and found that it was developed by the Initial D arcade team members in part. It is, as you note, very focused on like drifting and like actual racing rather than being like a moving ball of chaos that I sometimes find Mario Kart to be.
Seriously.
There's like a real focus on like actual considered offense and defense, right? So rather than the strategy just being grab a weapon and just throw it out so you can get your next weapon so you can throw it out and sort of letting Mario Kart's, you know, roulette wheel of doom sort of do what it does. This is more about like, oh, you're in a good place, get a shield and sit on it until someone attacks you. Oh, you're behind, get, you know, a speed boost and use it at the right place type stuff. I just think it's a lot more about intentionality rather than Mario Kart's kind of focused chaos. And for me, the intentionality is a huge draw. I really like that.
All right.
I also think the game has a fantastic visual presentation. I think it's a very good looking game. I also noted that, like, while the low level challenges are very easy, very quickly when you move into the mid range of the game's difficulty settings, things got pretty tight. Certainly, I felt a little more challenging than I had ever felt by Mario Kart. Though again, for me, that's a positive. And then I'll last note one final thing: my initial race with the game, my very first experience, was very unpleasant as I experienced a minor gameplay bug where all of my system noises or sounds stopped activating during my second lap, and then the game hung on the like loading screen leaving that race, and I had to like hard reset my PS5. I was very irritated, but I have not, in the additional like 15 hours I've played since then, have not had that experience again. So I don't have a whole lot. Like, it was irksome that that happened, but since it was only the time, it's really a minor irritation. I don't think it's fully representative of like a poorly thrown together project or something.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're having a good time.
Yeah. Having an absolute blast. With all of this having been said, we've gone very long in the tooth. Let's hear that exit lewd.
Yeah, we have had a blast podcasting for you today. We wanted to shout out a post on Blue Sky from Ronso GNB saying someone needs to clip Captain Spike's otherwise pleasant sounding "fuck you, this is culture" for soundboard or something from the latest GameBuie.org podcast.
I'm right on top of that, Rose.
And if you send that over to me, I will try to make a, like, dance remix of it. I'm not joking. Not joking, bitch. And thank you for the connection on the social medias. Just a reminder that we do a social links question of the week that you could always go back to and respond to, even if it's a super old one. Like, honestly, if you still have access to ones from, like, 10 years ago, that'd be fun. But, I mean, more likely it'd be, like, ones from, you know, recent episodes that you're catching up on. So, that being said, we love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. Facebook likes? I guess you're our Facebook person. I do not engage with that company.
Don't put
anymore.
That on me. I mean, technically it's true, but don't put that on me.
I'm not judging you. I'm just saying, like, I have no context for the Facebook likes, but thank you if you are still on the Zucks hellscape. We are on Blue Sky. There's
sort
a
of
bit
a middling
of...
satisfaction at the moment, but it is we're in.
Yeah, that is probably the most active place to interact with us at the moment. We are GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
It's our URL that we can link. That's kind of cool. We are on Mastodon at GameBuoy at mstdn.games.
On Mastodon at GameBuoy at mastodon.games. And I will note, I have personally begun mirroring some of my Blue Sky posts to Mastodon, so I am trying to inhabit that space again.
I should probably do the same, even though I don't post a lot these days, aside on our GameBuoy ones. You can listen to our episodes get automatically mirrored to YouTube as well at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
You can email us at gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
Gamebuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
We used to do that all the time. Our home base, of course, is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
Where you can find all the show notes and links to all articles discussed for every episode. I mean, there was an era where life got busy and I maybe didn't have one or two. But, you know, overall, they're there. And if we should be somewhere that have not heard, please let us know. I feel like we have a pretty good pulse on where things are, but especially if you get your podcasts somewhere that we should be, RIP Stitcher Radio. I would like to hear some shout outs to some friends of Buoy.
If you're friends with Buoy, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Buoy, then you're down with me.
Yeah, okay, so first and foremost, I'd like to point you in the direction of Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, our friends and inspirations from whom we take so many of our cues. I really want to take this brief moment and note that Orange Lounge Radio, currently the Guinness Book World Record holders for longest ongoing weekly gaming podcast, announced that they will be, in the next month or so, concluding their 1,000 plus episode tenure. Obviously, we absolutely love those guys. I'm, in fact, going to try to listen to them live tonight. But I just really want to note that while they are here, we should cherish them and celebrate them. If you're listening to this and you haven't looked into what Orange Lounge Radio does, I strongly recommend that you do so. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent, worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my own words, they're the audience-supported site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the damn time, and we strongly encourage you to check them out and to support them if you like what they do. You should also check out The Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed and released several games themselves. Please check them out. And new to my shoutouts, but not new to the podcasting scene, is Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast. Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swingin' 60s through the rockin' 90s to Spectacular, Ultimate, and beyond. Slaggy, who would you like to point out?
I'd like to shout out to our fellow VOG Network show, VOG Network co-founder Bobby Blackwolf, host of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. We like to do that too. I'd also like to shout out to our hunty bunch over at the Video Game Realness Podcast for a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. Hopefully we'll see them returning soon. I'd like to shout out to our friends over at the Nintendo Powblock Podcast to dive into the week that was in the world of Nintendo. Over on Blue Sky, I'd like to send you in the direction of Standard Issue Computing on Blue Sky for retro and modern computer games, hardware, software, and history. Currently doing a fun PS3 themed with Standard Issue Cell Computing. I'd always recommend checking out Sasha's Retro Bytes on Blue Sky for bytes of vintage gaming, including magazine scans and photographs. Defunct Games is a great source for modern video game reviews, exciting trivia competitions, and old school magazine analysis. Gotta love those old school magazines. And last but certainly not least, I enjoy the videos of Thomas Game Docs on YouTube, where each video covers a different aspect of video game history, such as video game development and sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises. As ever and always, I have to shout out our wonderful theme music done by the late great Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the project that reorchestrated beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. Thankfully, the legend continues in the form of ZREO Second Quest, so go check them out and show your support over at ZREOSQ.com. And last but most certainly not least, shout out to my super hot and sexy robot boyfriend, Craig, our robotic recording engineer. Without him, Game Buoy would not be possible in the modern era, so definitely check out the Craig Discord app for your Discord recording needs.
Disco recording needs? I better tell Taylor Swift she would need them.
Ooh, I wonder if I'm on Craig's list. Ah! What's on our list of upcoming things, Captain Spike?
In the coming days, a return to the Game Buoy remake project as we approach horrific autumnal topics. So please look forward to that. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And where is your boy tonight? I hope he is a gentleman. Maybe he won't find out what I know.
You were the last good thing about this part of town.
Now recording.
God, what episode number do you think we're going to be on in like the year 2050?
Probably like remake episode 200, because we'll be on like general episode like 2000. And I don't know, it'll probably be something like looking back on games that helped us through the dark days 30 years ago.
I hope you're right. And you know, I think it'll be quicker to record because I'll be like, I don't need to take a piss break because I'm wearing my Depends.
And I'll be like, I've got a catheter.
Oh, no.
I'm howling.
Well, all I can really say is the monsters and bats don't have the tits as pictured. And that was the whole reason for my purchase. But honestly, same, I was ready to buy those, not to distribute as trick-or-treat treats, but because they had trick-or-teats. Like, I seriously was gonna buy them just to give you the booby bats, like, next time I see you. But now that they're triple boobs, like, not as motivated to buy them.
Like, literally, what's the point?
Oh my god, is that Death Adder? He's sexy.
Death Adder being sexy is something that I have heard gay people saying for many years, yes. God, that reminds me, when we were kids, my brother and some of his friends had collected a complete set of like Boris Vallejo like trading cards, I swear to God, like, gooning culture, the more I think about it, has actually been here all along, because these, like, 13-year-olds were trading these fucking vampire booby cards like mana from the heavens, I tell you what.
That's hella funny. And all right, this one is... Blah, 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 blah.
I was going to say, Ed Slaggy, if you'd like to kick us off here. Fuck you, this is culture.